Hi, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Skip to the End podcast.
Skip to the End.
Welcome to episode 80 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it's a beautiful day here at Skip to the End Towers. The sun is shining, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to record some high-quality audio content.
Couldn't agree more.
High quality and us, that's not a sentence that should ever go together. Talking about very high-quality audio, What an intro from the one and only Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah. And it really was him. It really was the man himself.
Well, you know, we don't get like impersonators here. Why would we need to when we've got the A-list just coming to us, recording intros just like that? And let's be honest about it. We need to celebrate episode 80. 80 is a big number. My favourite era for films, 80. It's huge. So what better way to celebrate than the one and only?
Absolutely right. Let's tell them what's coming up on today's show.
Our top three discussion topic is going to be our top three cop movies.
We're also going to be re-watching the sci-fi classic District 9.
Our main review this time is Kingsman: The Golden Circle, which is a follow-up to 2014's Kingsman. That film was a commercial and critical success, but will this one be? Find out in due course.
We're going to be going into the second round of our brand new quiz, Word Up, and you might notice a few revisions from the last episode. Stay tuned.
Sunday's supposed to be the day of rest, but it isn't today. We're going to masturbate, and this time it's going to be over good old Eddie Murphy.
And we'll have all the usual goodies that you're used to here at the Skip to the End podcast. We'll have listener questions, a huge prize giveaway this time round with some lovely Funko gear.
That's a Funko.
That's Funko.
For all your plastic toy needs.
And then we'll end the show with our recommendations of the week. Before we get started, though, just something I wanted to cover. Mark, you've had a bit of a conversation with an interesting chap on social media this week, haven't you? A rather big-name movie director.
Oh, yes, just the one and only James Gunn.
Yeah.
So, just my mates, you know, people think they're big celebrities and big film directors. For me, it's just Jamie Boy.
Yeah, Jesse
G. Or the J-Dog. So, yeah, he's just basically put a Facebook comment out saying how much that The Disaster Artist is his second most anticipated film of the year after the new Thor film. So I thought it'd be really funny just to go on there and put, oh, hi, James.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what he replied in front of about 4 million people.
Go on.
Oh, hi, Mark.
There it
Brilliant.
Is.
Millions of likes, millions of responses. My phone didn't stop. It felt like I was famous for 5 minutes. It was pretty good.
Yeah. You are famous.
So then I dropped a message saying, please come on my Mark and Me podcast, and I had no reply. But it's nice that he still saw my name and felt the need to say, oh, hi, Mark.
And on that note, let's get started.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits, you go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get cool. Bad boys, bad boys.
Our top three topic is all about the Rozzers. It's all about the filth. It's all about the popo. I am, in fact, talking about our top three cop movies. This is a fun one. I'm just going to throw it out there. I had a real good time researching these films. And I always want to throw out the question, did you guys have any rules that you imposed on yourselves?
I did, actually. I needed it to be a film or a collection of films that were primarily about the police. There are some films that are sci-fi films that have cops in, you know, or cowboy films that are about a sheriff. But I wanted it to be a specifically cop movie. That needs to be the main part of the film, the main thrust of the film.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
Just if cops are in it, it qualifies. That's it. I understand where Ben's coming from because some of the social media stuff was stuff like Blade Runner.
Yeah.
It's like, of course we want to talk about that, but it's not a cop film in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's been a difficult one and there was a lot to choose from. I didn't realise how many good cop films are out there.
There is, and we're gonna each give our top three ones. So Mark, it's over to you. Give me your first one, please.
A 1984 classic, Police Academy. The original, the best one of the seven. I don't care what anyone says. These are good films. Yes, they did completely get to the point where they're just flogging the same old story by the fifth or sixth.
Oh, Mission to Moscow is a classic.
It is one of my favourite films of all time, but other people's won't agree. It's just a great film. The characters are great. It's just all about these incompetent people that join the police force. It is such a mismatch of characters. We've got those great, great people like Michael Winslow. We've got the best actor in the 80s, Steve Guttenberg. Yeah. He is by far one of the most iconic. Awesome. The first introduction to Kim Cattrall.
Oh my God.
A babe. When I'm a kid in the 80s and watching these films with my dad, it was the introduction to seeing what large breasts are like. It might be degrading, but let's be honest about it. That was one of the first films that kind of said, these are what big boobs are like.
Were you not present in biology class?
I was, but I didn't pay as much attention when it's on a TV when there's a nice blonde police officer.
You're talking about like she was the instructor woman.
That's
she,
the
when,
one.
When she comes out of the water in the tight white t-shirt.
Yes.
I'm with you, brother.
And every single scene is just about her breasts. And even the karate scene when there's the guy that's learning karate, he puts his head between them. And the focus is all about the boobs. So it's not Mark being rude and perverted. It's all about that. But we've also got great characters.
Sorry, I just need to interject. I like how he started speaking about himself in the third person now.
Mark. Like social media already speaking for them already. But we've also got Bubba Smith, who plays Hightower. What a great guy. Really cool guy. And Tackleberry, one of my favourite characters. The ultimate army guy. That guy at school that always wanted to be in the cadets and this. He's the ultimate. But every single character's funny. I do believe it's a good film. Every single character I laugh at throughout the whole film. Michael Winslow, his voices that he does, everything about it. I wanted to be him growing up. I wanted to basically do those voices and think I could make millions out of it.
Can you give us a Michael Winslow impression?
No,
now.
Go on,
do a helicopter.
Please, do a helicopter.
That's pretty good.
Not bad.
I thought I was watching Apocalypse Now.
I thought Chinook was about to head on over. Good.
I'm only doing one, that's it. I'm not doing any more.
That's all right, man.
If I don't make it as a podcaster, I can always be the next Michael Winslow.
Absolutely.
But do you agree? Please tell me you like this film.
Of course, of course.
It's great.
It's brilliant. And the second and third are good. I like Zed, the character, the bad guy who's... Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's his name in real life? Bobcat...
Goldthwait.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
What a great guy. See, I could do his impression. That's terrible.
It was the face more than anything.
That's why we should be filmed. I'm telling you now, we'll be making millions. But it's all about Steve Guttenberg. I don't care what anyone says. My favourite character, Mahoney, he's just brilliant. I love him. He's such a trickster in the film, isn't he? He's always been the rebel and going against the big police force and the big officers and always pulling massive, massive pranks on them all. And I just love the guy.
He was amazing. I loved Commandant Lasard as well.
Oh,
great character.
All of them.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're going to get a reboot in the next year or two. Oh, so
they've been saying that for years and I don't want that.
In Zimmer frames, original cast, they're getting back. Like they did on Ghostbusters when they actually try and get the original members back in.
Because that was really successful.
You know Melissa McCarthy's going to get cast in it somehow.
But yes, that's my first choice and it's going to be a tough one for you to top, Ben, I'll be honest with you.
Well, I'm going to go with a film that I've evangelised about on this show many, many times and it's Copland.
Masterpiece.
It's a phenomenal film directed by James Mangold. It came out in 1997. It has a complete, just insane cast when you think about Sylvester Stallone, Robert De Niro, Ray Liotta, Harvey Keitel, among others. And the reason why I love it so much, not only is it a great film, but it's the greatest single performance of Sylvester Stallone's career. He was playing totally against type. He plays a guy called Freddie Heflin, who always wanted to be a cop, but then he was prevented from doing so because he went deaf in one ear after an accident. So he became a sheriff of a little town in New Jersey, just over the water from New York and where all the NYPD work. And they all live, most of the cops live in this little hamlet in New Jersey, and he's the sheriff of Copland, as they say. And after years of turning a blind eye to the corruption and the crimes of the NYPD, he finally decides that enough is enough, and he takes a stand. And it's a magnificent, magnetic performance from Stallone. It's nothing like anything he's ever done before. The closest, in fact, that he's come to it was in Creed recently.
Oh, beautiful.
In which he was excellent, of course. In this film, he's overweight, he's meek, and he's quiet. And meek and quiet are not words you would ever put with Sylvester Stallone, are they?
Not in a million years.
Hell no.
But that's the way he approaches this role, the total opposite of what we're used to seeing. And he really should have been nominated for an Oscar. His performance is so indelible, so phenomenal. He was so attached or attracted to this role that he took scale, which is effectively Hollywood minimum wage. I think most of the actors, including De Niro, all took scale because it was a small, low-budget project, but they all believed in it so much. And it just comes together so beautifully. One of the final scenes when Stallone's character, Heflin, is marching up the street with a shotgun in hand because he wants to take down Harvey Keitel's Lieutenant Donlan, it's one of my favourite scenes in movie history. You just see this guy who's been put upon and never really achieved anything, and now he decides it's my time, I'm going to fix this problem. And I just, it's one of those punch-the-air moments, you know?
Massively. It's like, it reminds me of, I'm not going to say Braveheart, I can't put that in the same way, but you are cheering, you're literally out your seat. That film I didn't watch until you brought it as a... Was it something for a topic or something before?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did a topic of actors that should have been nominated for an Oscar and weren't.
And I'd never even heard of it. I couldn't believe it. It was that under the radar. And I checked it out, and I think I bought it on DVD that night, went home, watched it. Unbelievable. And everyone always associates it with Rocky. That's all you ever get. Rocky or Rambo. I agree, Ben. Best performance ever by him.
It's magnificent. And the direction's brilliant as well. It was, as I say, directed by James Mangold, who I brought up the other week as a director who'd shit the bed with Night and Day, but has otherwise made a lot of good movies like 3:10 to Yuma, Logan, etc. It's so good. And I mentioned already, Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel.
Heavyweights.
How can you go wrong?
The fact they all did it as well for like minimum wage is mad.
What goes to show how strong that project was.
A lot of people did it for Clerks too as well, I just want to say as well.
Of course they did.
That's the same.
Can you not talk about Clerks 2 and Copland, please?
Please don't.
Side by side.
Look at the look of disgust.
There is... Oh man, I better save this very, very quickly with my first choice. So I'm going to 2012 and I'm going with the director of David Ayer, who did Suicide Squad and Fury. My choice is End of Watch.
Oh, great movie. Mm-hmm. God damn, I love that film.
Yep. I've never seen it.
Hey, tell you what, Mark, it's on Amazon Prime. Go check it out. It is wonderful. And it stars our boy Jake Gyllenhaal, Jakey G, and Michael Peña. And they are two cops who are partners and also best friends. Not quite Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero best friends. but they're kind of close. And it just follows their day-to-day lives on patrol. So apparently it was filmed over the space of 8 months. And the film's shot very much like a documentary. So we see a point of view from the dash cam on the car. We see it as, I know Jake Gyllenhaal's character is doing a film documentary for his film editing class, and it's also shot as it would be in a film, but the whole direction of camera work is very shaky. It's not very focused at times, so it gives that realistic punch of how gritty their lives are. There's a lot of point of view shots that remind me of Call of Duty. Do you remember when they've got the guns and you're actually seen from the barrel of the gun on coming to the perpetrator? It's not a glamorous depiction of police life, but I would certainly think it's one of the more realistic portrayals. The relationship between Gyllenhaal and Peña is electric. You really do believe they're these band of brothers that have got each other's back. You know, they go to each other's weddings, they're there when their kids are born. They really do have this real strong relationship that you buy in automatically. And ultimately, we see sort of the whole cube rather than just one side of this life that they have between them. It's just gritty, it's grisly at times, you know, it's jaw-dropping. It's probably the best way I can describe it. It's just one of those films that does leave you breathless, not just during the film, but also afterwards. You really need sort of 10 minutes just, you know, you need to sit down, you need to have a Solero, you know, you need to just chill the F out.
That's Solero for all your fruity ice cream needs.
It's an incredibly visceral film.
Massively.
Really, I mean, you use the word gritty there, and that's the right word for it. It is gritty, it is grisly, but gripping. It's a fantastic film. Mark, you've got to get
Please
on it. It's the best thing David Ayer has ever done.
Yeah. I mean, he did Fury and Suicide Squad.
Let's leave it there.
It's Jakey Boy.
Jakey Boy's always on form. He's brilliant in this. Michael Peña is one of the best utility men in Hollywood at the minute. If you've got a kind of a second fiddle, get Michael Peña in, because he's always brilliant.
Yeah. Oh,
well, you've sold it to me.
Please watch it. There are no words how great this is.
And you haven't spoiled anything for me, which is quite good.
Mm-mm.
It sounds really raw.
Oh, I mean, the first 5 minutes alone, when you're literally, you are the dash cam of this cop car going through the streets of South Central.
I'm excited. Mm-hmm. This is what's good. Sometimes with the topic choices, I can join in. But, oh, yeah, but this on this time, I'm going to watch it. I don't know why I haven't watched it. It's bad, really.
And I know you would love it. I'm not even just saying that. It would be right up your street, for sure.
Right, it's recorded right now. I'll come back on the next episode and I'll tell you what I thought.
I promise. Don't write checks that your ass can't cash.
But it sounds like a good one. Some of the stuff we take away is shy. I'm trying to get him to watch stuff like, you know, Yoga Hosers. It's never going to happen. But
I've
it did happen.
It. I've seen it.
But it did happen.
Terrible.
But it took
or
a while.
Eden Lake.
Tremors.
Nope.
No.
You've just done such a really good review of the film. Your reason is amazing. And I can't give such an in-depth discussion about this because it's a film about a police officer and his dog.
Oh, Christ.
But it isn't Top Dog. It's Turner and Hooch.
Yes!
A 1989 classic, because it's
classic.
Tom Hanks at his best. Tom Hanks 80s is the best Tom Hanks.
Very true.
Unbelievable. And he's so lovable as a guy. He's funny. He's just being himself. Now he does a lot of serious roles. I know it's because he's 50, 60 years old. He's not going to be the same sort of Josh Baskin from Big and stuff like that. He can't be. But I love him in the 80s. The Burbs, stuff like this is amazing. And in this film, he adopts this dog to join him on the police force as a detective. It's the most stupid, over-the-top performance ever because he's trying to train a dog to help him out in the police force. But I just love it. I love the character he's being. It's all about Tom Hanks and the way he is. He's just trying to do his best to be a police officer with a sidekick. It doesn't work because the dog's disobedient, trashes his house, trashes his apartment. You've both seen it, right?
Of course.
Many a times.
I think I've seen it once.
You like would have seen it 20 years ago. You've got the steel book. This is the one. If there's a film that Ben isn't going to take away and watch again, it won't be this.
No.
But it's great. It's really good 80s feeling. The soundtrack's great, but it has got one of the saddest endings of all time.
Massively.
Spoiler, skip to the end, Hooch is dead.
Okay.
Not the drink from the 90s, no. The dog.
No, that's going strong again.
That's
Hooch.
Yeah. So maybe the dog Hooch will make a return.
Maybe.
That Hooch would be with good. Hooch.
His own spin off, just Hooch.
Hooch with
What's
Pooch
he done
with
without
Hooch.
Turner?
Hooch and Pooch, imagine.
This is if anyone if this gets announced next week, we said it first.
Yeah. The script writes itself as well.
Yeah. Plus cut the puns.
So yeah, I've got nothing else to say apart from the dog's fantastic in it. It's a sad ending. I absolutely love Tom Hanks. He's in my top three actors of all time. And in this, he shows why. Unbelievable film. Ben, get on it. Don't tell me you're going to not watch it, please.
I'm sure I have seen it 20-odd years ago. It's not on my list of things to rewatch anytime soon, though.
Well, we are going to revisit our top five films of all time in January. So you never know.
Knocking on the door.
Hooch is coming. Back to you then, Ben.
I'm going with a slightly more serious film. 1973's Serpico.
Oh my god, what an amazing film.
Never seen it.
Oh,
please do. Right, it's on Netflix. Go watch it, please.
It is arguably Al Pacino's greatest performance. He's an honest cop who blows the whistle on the corruption in the NYPD, which I've realised is a theme in my picks here today. The film's a true story. It's based on the career of a real-life NYPD detective, Frank Serpico. And I really like the way the film opens. It opens in medias res, so it starts at the end with a shaggy-haired and bearded Serpico, bullet-ridden and covered in blood. And then it flashes back 12 years to a clean-cut, short-haired Serpico in his first days on the force. The film then follows him through his career as he experiences the corruption and in the department, and he vows to clean it up. He's the one good man, the one honest man left in the NYPD. And it's a brilliant performance of quiet determination from Pacino, but it gradually gets more and more unhinged as he starts to realise how trapped he is in a system that doesn't give a shit. Everyone's against him. These NYPD cops who are bent and corrupt, they only can be that way because the top brass turns a blind eye to it. So he realises no matter what he does, no matter what he says, nothing's going to change until he takes stuff into his own hands. He goes to the mayor, he goes to the press. It's an absolutely phenomenal performance. And a lot of that is in part to the fact that Pacino spent time with the real Frank Serpico. He shadowed him, he talked to him, he interviewed him, and he really embodied that character. Because Pacino's method, you know, he goes full on. Apparently he was so full on that there were times when he was driving and in his mind he was Frank Serpico, even though there were no cameras running, and he started pulling over drivers for, like, infractions.
Christ.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure impersonating a police officer is a crime in and of itself.
Kinda.
So, you know, he should have watched that, really. But it's an absolutely phenomenal film. Mark, put it on your list directly after End
I might
of
just
watch.
Quit my job and watch loads of classics.
Yeah,
sounds like
time.
A plan. Hey, that bit when he starts like smashing up the table and chairs, and afterwards he's just so calm. He's like, I'm okay. Like, no, you're bloody not, mate. Yeah. Have a Solero.
Stop plugging Solero.
Solero
it's coming up to winter. Start plugging something like, you know, fine wine what? That you can enjoy. As
That's beef stew.
This film I see everywhere. It's in like top tens of all time. It's on IMDb's top 250. Yeah. It's always in the top cop films that they do online. I don't know why I haven't seen it. It's just ignorance. I'm probably watching Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus 2
great
too
film.
Many times. You can see why, but it's on the list and I should have watched it. And I feel bad for not seeing it. It's stupid. Al Pacino.
You know what? I'll be honest. I've only seen it probably... Do you remember when we did Movie Masturbate with Al Pacino?
Yes, yeah.
That was part of the homework I did to research some roles. So that was the first time I'd seen it. So
it's magnificent. And a little side thing that's so good about this film is if this film didn't exist, we wouldn't have one of the greatest episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia of all time. There's one episode, I think it's in season 3, where the gang comes into possession of a decommissioned police car and they start acting like cops, and Charlie goes full on Serpico, and it is laugh out loud hilarious. If you're not already a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, get on it. All 12 seasons are on Netflix. Get involved.
Nice.
You're getting more, you know, this topic, you're getting recommendations as well. I've took two with me. Listeners out there, you must have took three or four by now. This is what we do. We give.
Mm-hmm.
So what have you got to give us, Gemma?
So I'm going to give a film that we're all familiar with, and I know all of our listeners are familiar with, but it'd be criminal if I didn't include this. It's Hot Fuzz.
Yarp.
So if you've been living under a rock, it is, of course, directed by Edgar Wright, and it stars Simon Pegg and Nick Frost as Sanford's finest boys in blue. I'm not going to talk too much about the story because everybody knows what the story is, but the reason I've picked it is because there are so many influences from other cop movies like Point Break, Lethal Weapon, Bad Boys. But Wright creates this beautiful homage that makes it so ordinary in the village of Sanford. So, for example, towards the end when they're finally realizing, you know, oh my god, the bad guys are the local village people, not the band, but
that would make a good spin-off.
That's a good film right there.
I like that. Yeah. We've already made two films on this topic.
Yeah.
Busy
definitely.
Studios.
But in the supermarket, when they've all got the band of trolleys and they're ram raiding the delicatessen counter, you know, it's just something so ordinary like that, which in America, it would probably be like tanks or explosions of some sort. Mm-hmm. But it just has this real charming edge to it. And of course, Nicholas Angel, who Peg plays, is the perfect cop. This is the cop we see in all of the police movies. And Danny Butterman, played by Frost, is just the cheeky monkey who is not associated with being a fit cop. You know, let's face it, he was never going to win the bleep test that they do. He was always probably going to be last. But it's just so clever. And it's the little nuances, the little sound effects. And even at the beginning, when the Universal logo comes up and you hear the history of the police sirens, so you've got this tin whistle to begin with, and then you've got the blaring sirens at the end. It's great. And there's musical nods too. So Edgar Wright's favourite band is the John Spencer Blues Explosion, who we've recently heard in Baby Driver with Bell Bottoms at the very start of the scene. The song they use when they're booking all the bad guys is Here Comes the Fuzz. And right at the very end, you've got Supergrass closing it with Caught by the Fuzz. So it's you know...
It's like what we do on these episodes with our music choices. Yeah. You know,
exactly.
It's intelligent.
Although, I don't know. I think we put more thought into it than just Googling the word fuzz and seeing what comes up.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
You're forgetting one of the best characters in there, back at the station, Bill Bailey.
Ah, yeah. The twins.
Yeah, yeah. The one and only.
Nobody tells me nothing.
The impersonations we're doing today is gold, but a great... I don't like The World's End, I'll say it openly. I just think it's a bad end to the Cornetto trilogy, in my opinion. It just drops, doesn't it? Shaun the Dead is a masterpiece. This one's not too bad, it's pretty good, and then it's... which is a shame, really.
I think at the minute, I kind of prefer Hot Fuzz to Shaun, but I think it's purely down to the amount of times I've seen Shaun, because it's on ITV2 every fucking day. So because I haven't seen it as many times, I kind of enjoy it more. It feels fresher to me at the moment.
But I mean, I'd be foolish not to include this, and I did see a lot of people come through on social media.
Thousands. I'm going to finish off with another 80s. All of my choices today are the 80s, but I think the 80s were the best for some of the cop films. And you've actually just mentioned it. It's Lethal Weapon.
Oh,
tremendous.
By far one of the best films out there of the 80s. And in my opinion, Mel Gibson's best era of films. You've got him playing Martin Riggs, who plays the half cop, half clown to perfection. His character carries tension for me like no other. And I absolutely love him back then. He's turned into a complete and utter mentalist now. Mm-hmm. And it's not allegedly. He is. He's absolutely insane. Don't sue me if you are listening.
Hashtag sugar tits.
He'll be too busy doing something racist anyway, but it doesn't matter.
Allegedly,
that's all right. But he is charismatic. He is charming. He is on the edge of depression. He is going through the loss of his wife. And we even get to the point where he's got a gun in his mouth and about to blow his own brains out. We see this suicidal part of him that is tragic. But he gets partnered with Danny Glover, one of his best performances of all time, who's the old-fashioned classic cop. Mm-hmm. The detective that is so traditional and the one you want to be aside.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
Again, this isn't the guy from Police Academy right now. That's actually Ben. And I'm telling you what, those two as a partnership are some of the finest kind of buddy in the history of cinema. Big statement, but they are just perfect together. The chemistry on screen between those two is just unbelievable. Why did Mel Gibson turn into such a nutter? Because he's so good in this.
Booze. That's the answer. Booze.
As we're drinking Scrumpy Jack.
I'm a little bit of Scrumpy Jack.
Scrumpy Jack.
Scrumpy
I'm going to turn mental and be religious and racist in a few years. But anyway.
We're never going to get sponsorship from Scrumpy now, if that's your sales pitch.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed to turn you racist.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, yes, back to this film. One of the best. Richard Donner's finest, in my opinion. Everything about this film is the finest. You've got Mel Gibson, you've got Danny Glover, you've got Richard Donner. Just a great film. Laugh out loud moments. Times when you want to pour your heart out when you see how tragic his life is. Going through the death of your wife is not easy. I'm not saying like from first-hand experience. I'm just saying it's not an easy thing to do. In the film, he doesn't do it cheesy. He doesn't do it like the way that you do in a Michael Bay film where he's sat on a gravestone with an American flag crying into it. You know, it's just a great film. And the second one isn't bad either. The
second one's awesome.
The third is when it starts to go down.
Little Joe Pesci in it.
Yeah, but let's be nice about him.
Yeah, well,
I'm a big fan of him.
He's Joe F. and Pesci.
This is odd, an odd thing and weirdly specific thing to say, but I love how there's a running thing in the Lethal Weapon films of Riggs dislocating his shoulder and then popping it back in to location himself. I just think that's a really badass move.
I hope that if I ever did it, I could do it. I wouldn't. I'd do more damage and break my collarbone or something, or I'd be in that much pain, I'd be crying. But he just does it so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of the best films out there, and if you haven't seen it, you must be dead. I really do believe everyone I know has seen Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you, Ben.
I'm sticking with the 70s, and I'm going to finish off with 1971's Dirty Harry.
Oh my God, classic. This is what this topic is all about.
Man, look, in early Clint Eastwood movies, he was always the coolest guy in the room, and no one comes cooler than Dirty Harry Callahan. He's a no-nonsense San Francisco cop with a shoot-first, ask-questions-later style, and he's hunting down Scorpio, who was a serial killer based loosely on the Zodiac Killer. It's a fantastic thriller. It has a real cat and mouse vibe to it. And it gets even better towards the end because Callahan was the first real depiction, or one of the first real depictions, of the anti-hero loose cannon cop. And towards the back end of the film, the top brass have told him, no, you can't keep going after this guy, you can't harass him. And he's like, fuck you. He goes off and does it himself. You know, he has to take the law into his own hands. And that's why he's so cool. We think of that as being second nature now. We're so used to seeing cops who bend or break the rules. But that really wasn't a thing until the early 70s, until this film kind of broke the mold for that. And it's just full of such great lines. So everyone knows the classic line, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do ya, punk? Come on now, it's just one of the absolute best. If you see these polls of the greatest lines in film history, it's always in there. It's always
top
in
five,
the top.
Always.
Yeah, top five, top ten, without a doubt. Not only is the character of Dirty Harry Callahan a badass, Clint Eastwood was a fucking badass. So much so that there's a scene in this film where the killer, Scorpio, is driving a school bus. He's kidnapped all of these kids. And Dirty Harry has tracked him down. And then Harry is standing on this bridge, and the bus passes under the bridge. And he jumps off the bridge onto the top of the bus, and Clint did his own stunts. And you can see it because the camera follows him. You see his face, clear as day. He literally did jump off a bridge onto a moving bus. But he was just such a badass. And the interesting thing is, he wasn't even the first choice for this film. A lot of actors, people like, I think Robert Redford and people like that, were approached to star in this film. And a lot of people turned it down because they said, no, it's just too right-wing. It's too fascist, this guy who takes the law into his own hands and, you know, the ends justify the means and all that. Luckily for them, Clint Eastwood isn't really bothered by that sort of thing.
No.
He's kind of into his right-wing nonsense.
He,
so.
he quite likes talking to an empty chair, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does a bit. And do you know what? I bloody love fascism when it's confined to the silver screen. In the real world, it doesn't work. It's abhorrent. But on film, I'm down with it.
My only concern with him now is he probably drinks Scrumpy Jack because he's turned a bit mental and gone quite racist. So
I don't know about that. I don't know about racist, but he's very right-wing.
I've seen a few outbursts by him that are maybe allegedly, but I think he's gone a bit...
Well, I mean, yeah, we've seen American Sniper.
Yeah, oh my god, with the fake baby.
What a great film, though. I've not seen, was there many sequels to this?
Yeah, I think two or three.
Never watched any of them. Shouldn't have to, genuinely. I think it's just a standalone. It should be a classic as it is, and that's it. Don't cash in on it.
Nah.
Masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can ever top that.
I'm going to give it a go with my last one. So, 1995, David Fincher, 7.
Oh,
marvellous.
I kind of wanted to cover a bit of difference with my top three. So I wanted to cover the comedic side. I wanted to cover sort of the everyday side. But this is as dark as it gets. Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt star as police detective. And one's an inexperienced rookie. The other one is days off retirement and is about to enjoy the rest of his life. But they're out to capture this killer who's using the seven deadly sins as his calling card. But the film throughout has this real sort of filthy feel to it. I mean, this is, you think, you know, end of watch is gritty. This is oil all over the walls, all over your face, all over your overalls, and you're going to have like some kind of chemical bath to wash it off.
With a Solero.
Yeah,
that's the only way to have a good
bath. See, the Solero trilogy. But it feels dank. It's like crawling through a tunnel that there's no light out of, and I just love how Freeman and Pitt are complete polar opposites of each other, and they shouldn't work together because they have these two completely different set of opinions, but it works. And the partnership is just so strong between them. You've got Freeman as a sort of calm yet world-weary guy. He's seen everything. Surely nothing can shock him. But of course, with these murders happening, it's shaken him to the core. And of course, you got Brad Pitt's character, who's just like a loose cannon. You know, he's sort of frantic. A little sound could really set him off. And he's, you know, he's so unpredictable. He almost makes him incredibly dangerous. As opposed to the killer, who we find out is a chap called John Doe. And of course, what's in the box?
What's in the box?
I always think that Nick Cage should have done that scene. What's in the box?
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked.
One of the most haunting bad guys in the history of film, I would say.
Yeah, so good.
Not once does John Doe or Kevin Spacey raise his voice at all. It is always this one monotone kind of tone that is just so, so scary.
It's sinister, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's hard-hitting. It's a brilliant crime story. It's going to break any hardened professional, and it's fantastic to watch. A real joy.
Is it gluttony where you see the guy who's been left to starve and then it's like that emaciated body on the
bed? I know there's a fat guy that's forced to eat to death, but then, is it Sloth, I think it might be? Yeah, and he's got like an arm missing, and then you think, he's dead, and then he goes,
that's
horrible.
Fucked.
That is a big scare jump. I think when I first watched that, bloody hell.
And I never get the time right. It's like the head on Jaws in the boat. I never quite know when it's going to be. And I'm like, I've got this. You bastard.
Every time.
Fucking bastard.
Yeah, a masterpiece. I'm absolutely obsessed with...
have you said all 9 films are masterpieces so far? I'm sure you have.
Totally. Maybe not. But that is a masterpiece. David Finch is one of the best. There's nothing else you can say. It really is just a perfect one. We haven't seen it. We've ruined it. But, you know, go and watch it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say now.
No.
We are done. And so shall we hear from social media?
Let's do it.
So we're going to start off with the film grump at KJ Crichton. It said LA Confidential.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Lethal Weapon and Dirty Harry.
Yes.
Matthew Fisher at CouchPotato_MVP said End of Watch. The Departed. I'm surprised none of us said that.
See, to me, that's more of a gangster film than a cop film.
True. And Fargo, which again, good film, but I...
Yeah, Marge Gunderson is a cop, but it's not a cop film. It's a crime film, but not a cop film, if you know what I mean.
If there's no dog in it, it doesn't count.
Yeah, good point.
Morphic Fields at Morphic Fields says Dirty Harry, Copland and Saigon.
Very popular choices from the Skip to the End. Mm. You can see these people on our wavelength. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed. The Album at The Album Web said Gone Baby Gone.
Oh, great film.
Unbelievable.
Nearly made my top three, I'll be honest. But didn't because... just didn't.
Good reason, though.
Good explanation.
Just didn't. Because why not? Training Day.
Not a fan.
And and Witness.
Not seen that.
Neither
is that
I.
The Harrison Ford one?
Yes, it is.
Or is it Amish?
Yes, it is. Ashy Slashy at Ashy_Northy said Heat.
Yeah.
That is a masterpiece.
Badass.
That's fair.
Serpico agrees with Ben. And Seven with me. Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for someone that's got Turner and Hooch on here. They'll come, don't worry.
No one said Top Dog and I even used a picture.
Oh,
that annoyed me.
Shame. Susie Bennison at Suzarella said LA Confidential, Hot Fuzz and Copland. I mean, those three, but that's...
That is a Skip to the End choice.
Yeah.
Jason Manley at Duke_Aardvark said LA Confidential, Assault on Precinct 13, the original version.
Yeah.
And Dirty Harry. Then we've got Martin Coleman at Martin Coleman 3 said Bad Lieutenant.
Which one? Again, I'm assuming the original, not the Nick Cage remake.
I don't think so. I think this is the Harvey Keitel one, but man, that is hard to watch. Very hard. Naked Gun and Fargo. And then lastly, we've got James Gain at James Gain said Hot Fuzz, 22 Jump Street, so the sequel.
Oh,
interesting.
And Super Troopers, which I absolutely bloody love. Great film.
I've never seen that.
There's a sequel to Super Troopers coming out next year, isn't there?
And it's hilarious. And they've also done a film called Beer Fest. That's definitely worth watching, too.
Yeah, I like Beer Fest.
I just feel like I haven't seen anything. I've not seen Super Troopers.
Netflix. Get on it.
You keep plugging Netflix and Amazon. We've got accounts. There's nothing we can get from them. Next topic, who is it?
Oh, that would be me.
Hey.
So for the last couple of topics, we've stuck with solid genres, haven't we? So we've done cop movies this time around. What did we do last time? Disaster movies.
Yep, that's the one.
Said Mark, panicking when I threw it to him.
Don't do that to me again.
You broke a sweat there.
Jesus Christ. Why are we not filmed?
Exactly. So I want to carry on in the same tack. I want to stick with a nice solid genre. So next time around, we're going to come with our top three spy movies.
Amazing!
So that's spy, secret agents, anything espionage related. Top three spy movies.
Yes!
I saw in you what someone once saw.
Golden Circle proudly presents...
We've been to our local View cinema to see Kingsman 2, The Golden Circle. This is the second film in the Kingsman franchise, based loosely on a comic book by Mark Miller and Dave Gibbons. This time around, the spies of the very British Kingsman Secret Service travel over the pond to work alongside their US counterparts, Statesmen, as they attempt to bring down a psychopathic drug baron trying to hold the world to ransom. The film stars the returning Taron Egerton and Colin Firth, who are joined by Julianne Moore, Pedro Pascal and Jeff Bridges, to name but a few. Be warned, there will be spoilers. Mark, before we get into it, you revealed last time round that you hadn't in fact seen the first Kingsman film.
And I still have not. So
you have seen it since. So
I have.
Very briefly, thoughts on the first one?
Really, really enjoyed it for what it was. I wish I'd seen it back then because it felt a bit old. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, it looks dated now. It feels a bit weird. And now that I've seen the sequel, my God, that kid looked like a kid and now he's an adult. So it freaks me out. But very funny, very well done, very original, very unique. And just the scenes have stuck with me since.
Yeah, so you enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it. I love the first one. Gemma, I think you like the first one as well,
didn't you? First film's cracking. Absolutely super.
Let's talk about the second one then. Mark, thoughts?
Bit too long for me, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy, isn't it? Let's be honest. The full front right now, this film is a comedy. If you go on IMDb or anything, it's going to be classed as a comedy. A comedy should not be 2 hours 20. If there's spy elements and all this as well, and action, it still feels like a James Bond film. Should not be touching on 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. A few times in the cinema, I was looking at my watch. I got a bit bored. Chop 25 minutes off this film, I would have enjoyed it more. Too long.
Fair play, Gemma.
It was okay. Maybe I expected more because of the first film. And you mentioned about it being a comedy. I didn't laugh that much.
No.
I think it was almost like the equivalent of putting tracing paper onto the first film and the Golden Circle was created. So there's a lot of things that happen in the second film that we see in the first film. But maybe the bar was raised so high with the first one, it was always going to be impossible to get over that hurdle. So it was okay.
I echo what both of you say there. It was too long, it was bloated, there was too much going on, and it was all sound and fury signifying nothing. It was just a collection of things happening with limited to no connective tissue between them at all. And it suffered from the same issues that most sequels do. It tried to be bigger, but it wasn't better. It was just a case of diminishing returns for me.
There's one thing that came from this film that is a huge achievement, and it's bigger than any other Oscar achievement or anything else with awards. Mark Strong is forgiven for Grimsby. That is one thing I will give him. I enjoyed him a lot in this film, as much as I did in the first film. I think he's a great character and I absolutely love him as an actor. What he did in Grimsby is unforgivable. It's absolute travesty. You never need to do that sort of job. You never need to lower yourself to that shite. But I'll tell you what, this has put it right for me. He's back on the good books for me.
I absolutely adore Mark Strong, and I think you can't blame anything to do with Grimsby on him. You know, he polished that turd as well as he could. Here's the thing for you. How old do you think Mark Strong is?
Oh, I want to say 38.
Mark?
40.
54.
No fucking way!
That boy looks good, doesn't he? I know he's bald, but 54, you wouldn't have thought it, would you?
Whatever he's doing, I want to do.
Yeah, big time.
Jesus
my
Christ.
God. But let's just talk about the good things, because it sounds like we've lowered the tone straight away. We've set up our cart right now, and on the front of the cart it says, sequel shit. You know what I mean? There were some good parts, right? Yeah. So this film, for me, was quite flashy. It was all about the special effects, the slow-down fight scenes, the big action scenes, and I think they were done well. We have a lot of ropey shit CGI at times. We have a lot of films that look badly done. Even stuff like The Avengers at times looks bad. I will say that the fight scenes in this, the explosions, the big action sequences, for me, looked great.
I absolutely adored the final showdown in the diner. So, spoiler, Poppy's offed. She's done a great big overdose. And we've got the final showdown between Eggsy, Harry and Whiskey. And it's bloody marvellous. You've got Word Up, Ow. But
stole that from us.
But we've got a version where it's mixed in with the Boss Hoss, who are a German band that do covers of rock songs in a country and western kind of style, and also the original with Cameo. I believe there's a little bit of, is it Korn that have done the heavy version? Mm-hmm. There's a mixture of all those three songs playing over this incredible fight scene. I absolutely adored it. And of course, nothing was ever going to top the big church scene in the first film.
No.
Because that is what makes Kingsman so effing cool. But this action sequence, it was a good runner-up, and I had a great big grin on my face when watching this.
I would agree that any of the fight scenes that involved Pedro Pascal as Whiskey with his bullwhip and his lasso were fantastic. They were so brilliantly choreographed. I adore Pedro Pascal. I'm a huge fan of his work. He was brilliant in Game of Thrones. He's brilliant in Narcos. There was a show a few years back called Lights Out where he played a young boxer, and he was brilliant in that too. So I'm a big fan. I love that. The one scene I will say where the action didn't work for me was the opening scene. There's a scene where Eggsy is fighting with one of his rivals, and they're zipping around London in a cab. And it just looked so cheap and tacky to me. At no point did it look real. It just looked like a shitty mid-2000s Grand Theft Auto to me.
And if that's looking like that now in 2017, 10 years, it's going to look like Scorpion King.
Yeah.
It is, though. It is. I'll give you that, because even the door falls off and he's kind of surfing on it on the back of the car while holding on. It's so over the top. And they should be, like James Bond films. I'm going to keep using James Bond because it is a homage to end scenes. It is so ridiculously over the top that he's riding and surfing on the back of this seat that's attached just about with his arm to the other side of the back of the... I can tell I don't like cars. The bumper. There we go. Holding on to the bumper.
But
it doesn't
even
drive. And then he's swinging around and landing back in and falling out. And then it's ridiculous. And it went on for too long.
And then sometimes bad CGI makers, they don't get the physics right. This felt weightless. It felt like the big car door and the weight of these people, they didn't have any weight. They were floating around like balloons. You've got to get the physics right. They've got to feel like they're really there, like they have some substance, and these didn't. It was a really shitty opening. That put me on the back foot immediately when the film started.
Come on, try and cling on to some good... I want to talk about the acting performance, because you said here at the start that Jeff Bridges was in it, and you also said that Channing Tatum was in it.
Kinda.
I went for one wee in that film. Are you sure they're in that film? Because I never saw them.
They were there for a cup of tea and then they left, I think.
All right, I will see your Channing Tatum and Jeff Bridges, and I'll throw in Halle Berry.
Was she in it as well?
Did she need to be in it? Because that was a redundant role. We've spoken before about if you remove an actor, it won't change a thing about the film. This is the prime example. Yeah. She was not used at all.
No, it was utterly pointless. It was just because they wanted to create her as a counterpart to Mark Strong's character. She was the American version of him, but it had no value. Mm-mm. Going back to Tatum and Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges' role, you could kind of write off as a cameo. He was only in two or three scenes. He did what he needed to do. It was just to get a big name on the screen. Channing Tatum, however, was advertised as being a lead role. In some of the early footage, early trailers, he was the one working the lasso. Mm-hmm. But apparently there were some sort of scheduling conflict, so they had to rejig the script so that he's in the first 5 or 10 minutes, he's in the last 5 or 10 minutes, and he just disappears for the middle 2 hours, which in a way was kind of a good thing, because it meant a lot of his work went to Pedro Pascal, who, as I say, I love and was brilliant.
He was great.
But it kind of felt like I feel like we were misled.
Like Blue Balls.
Yes, I had massive blue balls from not enough Channing Tatum.
Like Catfish, you got this advertisement, you thought, wow, this looks great, I'm going to go and see it for him, and it wasn't him. And you know what, the first thing I said to Ben when we walked out the cinema was that Jeff Bridges had basically walked off set of Hell or High Water in the same outfit, the same accent, the same haircut, the same cigar and the whiskey glass, went on that set, oh, I didn't realise you're filming the new...
Kingsman
movie. Wow, I was quite a fan of the first. Do you want a part in it? I haven't got anything stuff with me. Fuck it, don't worry about it. Just walk on, say a few lines in this office and walk off. Are you sure? I should go and get changed at least. Don't worry about it. What about the same accent? Just do it. Just be that same guy. Are you sure? Yeah, now fuck off home. That is exactly what happened. Ridiculous.
Is that the same thing that happened to Harrison Ford in Blade Runner 2049? It's based on his outfit, they just found him in Starbucks.
Hang on, I'm not ready. You are. You're always ready, Harrison. But that, for me, was a shambles. I just thought, at least be a different character.
It was a waste of time.
Speaking of shambles, I know we had a very quirky kind of villain in the first film with Samuel L. Jackson and that amazing lisp that he sported. I was disappointed. Now, Julianne Moore, she's a great actress and she played the part to her own, so I'm not going to knock her for that. But the villain was a letdown. I didn't feel it was a threat.
No, she didn't feel threatening. Mm-hmm. Julianne Moore's performance is amazing. Like, yeah. She played her as this really sickly, sweet, yeah. always smiling psychopath, or sociopath, I think is probably the right word. I thought she was brilliant, but yeah, she's not threatening as a villain, and she gets punked out so easily at the end. Yeah. She just dies without a whimper.
I was hoping they were going to put the mincer on, and she was going to go through it and be made into a hamburger. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen, and it's almost, you could compare it to, say, the reveal of Colin Firth, that Harry is alive.
Yeah.
And my God, marketing. Now, who did the main sort of marketing in for this film? Because if you really want to pack a punch, if you really want bums on seats to come and see this film, do not, I repeat, do not advertise that a character who is clearly killed off in the first film is back in the second film. Disappointing.
It is. It's stupid, especially because, no offence to Colin Firth, who's a magnificent actor, he's not exactly a big box office draw with the kind of demographics who would see this film. There is not going to be a human being on earth who went to see Kingsman 2 because Colin Firth was in it. They would have gone to see it for Channing Tatum. So they could have withheld that, and the box office returns would have been the same, but it would have had an impact as a surprise.
And it was weak, his introduction.
Yeah, really bad.
It didn't have the emotional effect that it had on Eggsy. I just looked at him and went, oh, so he's now in the film. Okay, fair news.
I think you could have actually got rid of him. If you actually think about it and leave him that he isn't in the film, you actually stop and think, what did he contribute? Yes, he had that scene where he's underwater and they're trying to bring him back and get his memory back. He didn't add a key part to the film. They could have gone without him and showed that they've matured and they've become themselves.
Very true, actually, very true.
And he was clearly sleepwalking through the part. I've never seen Colin Firth look so disinterested. I know at the start of the film, when he hasn't got his memories, he's got some sort of retrograde amnesia. He is kind of supposed to be confused and a bit befuddled. That's fine. But when he regains his memories, I wanted to see the Harry of old, the Harry of the first film. And he was still just sort of frowning and bumbling through it. It was like, how much are you getting paid for this fella? You know, show up, turn up, put the graft in.
Even in Bridget Jones 3, he put more effort in. That's really kind of, you know...
It upsets me that you've seen it.
Oh, yeah, I'm married. You have to see it. It's the rule of marriage. So, Gemma, you were just talking then about, obviously, the huge baddie. We also had kind of a baddie in the film, but a good guy. We didn't know what side he was on until we learnt more about his character. What was it like seeing Elton John playing such a different role? Playing Elton John.
Oh, you know what? You know when you said about the film is too long? I think 20 minutes of this film is devoted to Elton John.
Yeah.
It was a cameo that, you know what? The first two times we saw him, all right, probably all that bit, you know, when they're shown the symptoms of this drug, where it shows, you know, you get the blue veins, then you're dancing loads, then you're paralysed, and then you see Elton John going, fuck off, to that guy who comes in. That was funny, but it could have just taken up the entire 15 minutes out of his other cameo because it wasn't needed.
It was utterly, utterly pointless, and he annoyed me more every time he came on screen.
He probably had more screen time than Colin, if you actually think about it.
Definitely more than Channing.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. And Hallie.
Mm-hmm. I like how we're first naming them all now.
Oh, Hallie.
Best friends. One of the things that annoyed me the most, I think, is a glaring plot hole, in my opinion. So, midway through the film, Harry, Colin Firth's character, he decides that Whiskey, Pedro Pascal's character, is actually a bad guy. He then kills him, but through some magical shit that makes no sense, they bring him back to life. And then it turns out that Harry was right. And at the end of the film, after Julianne Moore's character is killed, Pedro Pascal's character, Whiskey, is the bad guy. And that's the final boss fight. Why would that be the case? At no point in the film is there anything to suggest that Pedro Pascal is a bad guy. Harry just decides this because he does. If there would have been something like, you know, you notice that he has one of the golden circle tattoos that all the other bad guys have, if he'd have seen that peeking out the back of his shirt, a little tramp stamp, then I'd have got it. I'd have understood why he'd noticed that he was a bad guy. But there's nothing. There's not a single hint. There's not a single reason for him to be the bad guy. He just suspects he is, and then it turns out that he is.
Maybe it was...
Good guess, really, wasn't it?
It was a shot in the dark, and he got it right. Should play the lottery next week.
Well, maybe it was because those bandages look like blister plasters and it just messes up with your head, but...
Already we've made this film better, so I would take out Colin and I'd have them that they didn't need him all along and they're showing his memory that they can do it on their own, and we see a slight tattoo showing out the back of his belt and we just see the bit of the gold circle.
Yeah.
That's the film I want to see.
Get rid of Elton.
Elton's gone. And 25 minutes has gone, just chopping shite out. And the opening scene wouldn't be in there.
No.
But I will give credit to Taron Egerton. He was fantastic as Eggsy. I really, really like his character. He is still a chav. He's not changed. He's banging the Swedish... I was going to say French bird. The Swedish princess
that... Can you
not say
banging, please? It's just degrading. It offends me.
Whoa. You had about 2 minutes talking about breasts at the start of the episode.
Yeah, and...
Give me this one thing.
All right, this is it then. That's the line now. No one else can be vulgar for the remainder of the show.
But I enjoyed him He was great as a lead. I still care about Eggsy. I like the fact that he's not changed who he is, and we still see exactly the same person as it was in the first film. So I enjoyed his performance. I don't want to take that away because I know we're being a little bit negative now.
Yeah.
But we got to take away some good things.
I do like him, and the dude can wear a suit, I tell you that much.
Yeah.
But speaking of vulgar, there's one scene in the film that is so goddamn gross, I wanted to get up and walk out. It's the bit where he has to plant the tracker on on that horrible skinny girl at the festival, and he has a special tracker on his fingertip that he has to put on a mucous membrane so he fingers her in a tent, and you see a really close up shot of his finger going into her knickers, and it's like, what the fuck is this about?
We see the inside of her vagina. It's by CGI, yes. And it's like it's like, you know, on the Matrix when we're going into the people's brains, but it's that up their vagines.
Utterly vile.
Didn't need to be done.
No.
I completely agree.
I loved it that they tried to make Glastonbury look like Glastonbury, so they just did this CGI set and then this background of something like Coldplay.
No, it was Embrace. They've not had a hit out for about a good 12 years.
Embrace are probably one of my favourite bands of all time.
My God, they're awful. I'm not going to stick up for that. They are terrible.
I also love the fact that it was a bright, sunny day. When has that ever happened at Glastonbury?
Bollocks.
Absolutely. I forgot about that scene.
Yeah,
me too, and I'm glad I did.
Terrible.
Nothing else to say.
Nothing, we're done.
I've had enough.
It's going to be a high one. So on the last episode, what did we review? It.
We reviewed it.
And that was
an eight.
A very high eight.
Yeah.
Will this top it?
Nah.
Come on then, Gemma.
It was fun for what it was. I'm going to give it a 7. A low 7.
Yikes.
You're absolutely mental.
What? No.
7
ridiculous.
Is high. That's saying it's one less than something like La La Land.
I'm sure that's the same I gave Wonder Woman.
No. I think the reason why I'm going to give it 7, it's good for what it is. Yep, time does need to be shaved off. But if you were looking for a film that you don't have to concentrate on and you're going to see some really cool action sequences, then so be it. A low 7 out of 10.
Shame.
I'm trying to work out now, because I wanted to give it about a 5, which I think is fair, but because Gemma's given it so high, I want to drop it lower to bring the overall down.
You suck! You suck!
Skip to the end.
No.
We'll endorse them.
No. Give it your legitimate response.
4.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
4 and 7, I'm hoping Ben can save this with a low one.
So you're saying it's on a par with Ghost in the Shell? That we gave.
I probably enjoyed Ghost in the Shell more in a weird way, because I wasn't expecting... I had the first one to go off with this, so I was like, oh, cool, you know, I'm expecting... With Ghost in the Shell, I was just like...
That's your scoring.
Yeah.
It's a 5 for me. Not atrocious, but not good, and I'll never watch it again. So I think, using some kind of vague maths, let's call it 6 out of 10.
It's competition time! Short and sweet.
That was a classic.
That's
it.
That was a classic competition
school.
Time.
Yeah. It was 80. Episode 80 got celebrated by doing the old stuff.
Keep it simple.
That's what it's all about. So if you listened to our last episode, you'd have heard 4 competitions. 4. We're getting, you know, just giving away shitloads of good stuff. So we had an It bundle from our good friends Warner Brothers. That's Warner Brothers. Who gave us some balloons with the It logo on that are really, really limited. A Jack in the Box with Pennywise inside.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler if you win. A mug that changes colour, so when you put the hot water in, Pennywise appears. An umbrella that when it rains, it actually changes as well. And he starts looking at you.
That's
which will probably
fucking
make you...
scary.
Language, please. A very limited edition pop vinyl and lots of other stuff like a t-shirt and a hoodie and all this stuff that you can't buy. It was a really, really easy question. Who directed the remake of It?
Andy Muschietti.
Correct. I'm glad you said that because I can't say it. And Lisa Huckfield on Facebook got that. One of our most popular competitions, that was. Also, our good friends at Dark Money Tees, who've just celebrated 8 years in the game.
Good
on
them.
Happy
Pretty
birthday.
Damn good. I want a prize and present off them, even though it's their birthday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you work in an office,
you
bring in a cake, don't you, on your birthday? So they should bring us some t-shirts.
Yeah.
So do you know what? When it was my birthday, I went into the office, no one bought me anything, so I didn't even bother to get them cakes at lunch.
Well, rightfully so.
Screw those guys.
Aww.
I've literally never done it. Why would you buy someone something for your birthday?
I know, I'm sorry, but...
But Dark Bunny should send us
shirts. Well, yes, absolutely.
That's when the rules don't apply to them.
It was a really, really good bundle for Ready Player One. Really cool logos, really colourful, just great. Those guys knock it out the park. And what we said was, who wrote the book, Ready Player One?
Ernest Cline.
It is. Gemma wouldn't know that, because off air she's just admitted she's never read it.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Absolutely, get on it.
And I will.
You should.
Okay.
Andrea Howes has won that on Twitter, so you'll be getting that whole bundle. Now we're talking about the good stuff. This, my friends, is the good shit. Our good friends at Funko. That's a Funko. This is, yeah. I'm just going to stop now and say this, right? We've just started working with Funko, and you've seen it's gone absolutely insane.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Amount of people that get so infatuated with these figures is unbelievable. And we were so lucky to work with these guys because we got some very limited edition Pennywise ones for it. So we had one with a boat, one with a wig, one with a balloon, some daubs, a plush doll, and all this stuff I didn't realize goes, once it's gone, it's gone. So they go into the vault and you can't buy this stuff. We've got it here to give away. What we said was, who played the character of Pennywise in the new film?
It's Bill Skarsgård.
It is, another one I can't pronounce. And Matthew Wright on Facebook got that right. Now, when you get this, I want to see photos. I want to see how happy you are to get this stuff. And if I find Matthew Wright on bloody eBay flogging this stuff, I know your address where the prizes are going, I'll burn your house down.
Do you know what? I want a photo of Matthew Wright holding the Pennywise Funko next to that day's paper.
Yes.
Every day for a year. To prove that he hasn't sold it.
Yes.
Hashtag, I'm not selling it on eBay.
Yes. And finally, for an iTunes rating, we had the Phi Teeth exclusive Pennywise. This one is the real rare one where he's like, his whole jaw's out, and it's supposed to be the most scary pop they've ever done.
It's made me soil myself.
Oh,
what? God. It's really scary.
So base.
What? I just thought it was me.
All you had to do was leave us an iTunes rating. A lot of people have taken part in this, and this is the review that's going to win. It's from SmellyKelly21. This review is brilliant. Skip to the End is the only podcast I have ever listened to and will listen to. 5 out of 5. That is really good. That is pretty damn good.
Pretty good.
So you're going to get that. And again, I want a picture with the paper. Otherwise, you're going to burn in your sleep.
She's just been such a lovely review.
Yeah.
I know you watched Backdraft recently, mate. Yes. Come on.
Wait, no. That was
the best cop film ever. I want to give some more stuff away, starting off with the Kingsman bundle for the brand new film. So we've got a cowboy hat, some glasses, some very limited edition pin badges, some whiskey glasses, a whiskey stone set, which I didn't know existed,
an
umbrella. Really, really good prizes for the new movie. Who directed the new Kingsman film? Really, really simple. Our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere, really good mates of ours, they've come up with a brand new design for Pulp Fiction. Check this out.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
The whole Jack Rabbit Slims design. Those guys are great. They've given us one of their first t-shirts to give away. So, who directed Pulp Fiction?
It's the toughest question we've ever done.
Really tough. It wasn't a one-off, guys. Funko are back.
Hey!
They've given us a whole brand new set of the Kingsman Pops, all four.
Nice.
So you get Harry, Gazelle, Valentine and Eggsy. The whole set, really limited again. All you're going to have to do is tell us who plays Harry in the film. That's really, really simple. But because people are jumping on board and giving us iTunes reviews, let's give a second set of these Funkos away to a 5-star reviewer. Or any reviewer.
No, 5-star
reviewer. All the time.
And again, if you've already listened to us and you love our podcast and you've left us a review, you will qualify. You'll go into the pot along with any new reviews and we'll pick them all out in a few weeks' time.
Or set up a fake name on iTunes and just give us another one. It's fine.
Do whatever you need to do, but that's the way to say. And I do want to say now a massive thanks to Funko because those guys have been unbelievable to us. And I'm really looking forward to reviewing the new Blade Runner film in 2 weeks that have an incredible set of Funkos that would look amazing in Ben's apartment here. So if you are listening, Funko, you know what
hint, to do.
I can't make it any more obvious than that. And I think me and Gemma would also like a set. But, you know,
wouldn't say no.
The prizes are for the winners. But if you did actually put 4 sets in, you know, that would be pretty nice.
It'd be nice if we were the winners, too.
Yeah, so best way to enter, because I've seen this come through on Twitter, is go on skiptotheend.co.uk. Our Twitter's on there, our Facebook's on there, our email address is on there. All you need to do is send us the answers, and that's how you qualify. It's as simple as that.
Hello, little guy. It's the sweetie man coming.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot, could be an actor, could be an actress, and what we do is we discuss our favourite performance from that person. So on the last episode, we picked out Eddie Murphy. So this time, I'm going to ask Mark, I want your favourite performance of Eddie Murphy. 3, 2, 1, go.
Axel Foley. is the one and only from Beverly Hills Cop.
There we go.
That was a little bit Brent there, Jem.
I had the claws there.
One of the greatest performances of all time. Really is. Just perfectly cast. It was actually meant to be Stallone. I bet you didn't know
what?
That.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and it wasn't just some person on IMDb that said that. It's official. It was supposed to be him. He is the clever cop, but also very funny. One of the laugh-out-loud cop performances, I think. We should have talked about this when we did the actual cop. But he's just great. I think he's made me laugh out loud. I revisited watching it this week and I forgot how great it is. He's set out to do this murder investigation as a Detroit cop. And I just think everything about him is charming. Everything about him is funny. You just did the soundtrack from Axel F. The whole soundtrack is absolutely fucking unbelievable. And he actually lies to help his two mates that were meant to be on the job and they're in the strip joint. So he'll do anything he can to be the good guy, but also the bad guy. One of the greatest performances of all time. When I think of Eddie Murphy, I think of this film. I think of this performance, and he is the best. I have nothing else to say. I just love it.
It is fantastic. And the sequel is good. The third one.
What is it about the third one of, like, Lethal Weapon and this? I just don't do third cop films.
I think he needed a bit of bunts for his conservatory or something.
And he was doing his conservatory, so...
Needs a bit of money!
But an amazing film, and I'm sure you both love it.
It's an absolutely phenomenal film, an all-time classic.
Nothing else to say, honestly, it's that good. It just needed to say...
You've said it all.
Axel Foley.
You've said it all.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, but what's... but that's lovely, Mark, but I want to hear what Ben's got to say.
So I'm sticking with Eddie's classic period. I think pretty much everyone can agree that Eddie was at his best in the 80s.
Agreed.
Anything he's done in the last 20 years or so has been fucking shite.
Hashtag Norbit.
Don't say that, because that might be someone else's choice, you know.
So I'm going with what I think is the pinnacle of his career, and that was Billy Ray Valentine in Trading Places in 1983.
Incredible.
Such a good film. And he really was at the height of his powers, because he had things like Beverly Hills Cop, of course. 48 Hours is fantastic. I don't think you've seen 48 Hours, have you?
I haven't.
Get involved. Both that and the sequel are fantastic. Coming to America, of course, as well. In Trading Places, he plays a street hustler who two billionaires conspire to make rich at the same time as ruining a wealthy commodities broker played by Dan Aykroyd, essentially switching the two men's lives all for the purposes of a bet. And the film really is two great performances from Murphy, because he excels playing the first version of Billy Ray that we see, which is the fast-talking hustler. But then he also excels as Billy Ray, the broker, when he acclimatizes to that role. He plays both sides of it absolutely perfectly. But he wouldn't be as good if he wasn't so ably assisted by Dan Aykroyd, who's phenomenal. And, of course, Jamie Lee Curtis is brilliant as Ophelia as well. It's a wonderful cast. Denham Elliott's fantastic in it. What I love about this film is it showcases the real Eddie, and it makes me sad that he gave up this, doing films like Beverly Hills Cop, doing films like Trading Places, and traded it in, no pun intended, for kiddie fare, you know, absolutely pointless child-aimed movies like fucking Nutty Professor and
Doctor Dolittle,
Doctor Do Fuck All, mate, for me. Why? Why did he do that? Because he was the king? If you go back and watch his stand-up comedy things like Delirious and Raw, you see how... The word Raw was entirely appropriate because he was raw, man. There were no boundaries with Eddie. So why did he start doing this family-friendly shit?
Who knows?
It can't even be the money, because he was paid well for these films back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. In midlife. It must be just a midlife. Because some people bounce back. They do shite and then they come back.
Yeah.
He's so far gone, there's no way back.
He did do Dreamgirls, which was Oscar nominated. But, yeah, you know.
He's actually very good in that.
Mm. Yeah, it's not enough. No, dead to me.
I want to see him do a good adult comedy, which is what he used to excel at.
I think we'll be waiting a long time. Yeah. I'll be completely honest.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're having a good masturbate over him here.
So my choice, so... The film is Coming to America, because you're right.
Great film.
Eddie Murphy in the 1980s was the shiznit. But this is a bit of a trick one, because he actually plays four characters. So I've gone for one of those characters, and I'm in a clapping mood for Sexual Chocolate.
Sexual Chocolate! Sexual Chocolate!
It is, of course, Randy Watson. And I'm going to throw it out there. You just mentioned about making a bloody good adult comedy. This is it.
Yep.
It's Oh my God, he's popped on full prosthetics. He actually looks quite unrecognisable when he comes onto the stage, but as soon as you hear that voice, you know it's the Murphmeister himself.
Murphmeister.
And this guy's amazing. He plays the Jerry Curl, blue suit wearing sex machine that sings The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston like no other person can. And he does this uncanny thing where he sings it and he's slightly ahead of the beat because the greatest love of all. And it's brilliant because the whole crowd are not buying into him, but bloody hell, I'd be there front row screaming his name and asking him to take me with him. He is just hilarious. He creases me up every single time. The best bit is when he's finished his song and he's so frustrated that no one claps for him, so he just stamps his feet like a king, goes sexual chocolate. And then he does this amazing thing where he drops the microphone crucifix for me. Ben's doing hand movements. Just watch it. It's 2 minutes of pure unadulterated brilliance. It's come back, Eddie Murphy. Come back, Randy Watson. Come back, sexual chocolate.
The hand movements when he's pointing at the crowd and just turns to the side beautiful. And walks off cracks me up every single time.
Folded over, literally like 90 degrees folded over. It's perfect.
Just listen how excited you are from this. And it is tragic. There's no other word for it. It's so depressing that he's doing Dr. Doolittle Free and all this shite. Mm-hmm. And we joke about Norbit, but to put yourself in that sort of role, knowing that you are just being like an Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
It is. It's you've got such a legacy.
And he fucked himself with Norbit because Norbit came out the same year as Dreamgirls and everyone talked about him winning an Oscar. He was nominated, but everyone talked about him winning. And then Norbit came out just around the same sort of time when the voters were deciding on who was going to win the Oscar, and that ruined it for him.
They went, nah, you're all right, mate.
What a fool.
There is no way back. So, Ben, what have we had come through on the older social media?
Oh, we've had a fair few. We've got Ian Wilshire at BadgerMan80, who has said, Coming to America by an absolute mile.
Great choice.
Can't really argue with that. It is a phenomenal film. Samir Alam at SamirAlam94 has said, Shrek.
Yeah, voice work is pretty damn good.
I suppose that counts. John Wimmer at The Wim, a tie between 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop.
I've only seen one of them, so I can't comment.
Both brilliant, in my opinion. Chris Murphy at Murphy's Boredom. Trading Places or Beverly Hills Cop, he tickled my funny parts in those.
He's tickled many people's funny parts.
Yes.
Allegedly.
Jeff Biscuits at Jeff Biscuits. Coming to America, also Bowfinger. That film was unexpectedly hilarious. It really is.
I like Bowfinger.
I like Bowfinger a lot. Although I'm slightly annoyed that the last three people I've run out have all picked two. Yeah. You know the rules by now.
I know.
It's your favourite. You pick one.
And everybody I love people that one. Say, oh, honourable mention. No, that's cheating.
No.
Paul Lavender on Facebook has said Life, which is a really good film. It's one of his few recent films that's actually very good.
Martin Lawrence as well.
It's him and Martin Lawrence, and it has one of my favourite Eddie Murphy lines of all time. Martin Lawrence says to him, why have you always got to say nasty shit, Ray? And he replies, because I'm a nasty motherfucker. Love it. H. Aldsworth at To Miss Mum. Like a lot of his, but The Golden Child.
I've not seen that.
Have you not seen The Golden Child?
I've not seen anything, dude.
Dude, that's classic 80s, man.
Oh, you'll love that.
That's going above the Jake Gyllenhaal one. Sorry, but that's now
classic 80s. End of watch over Golden Child. Yeah,
sorry.
Lewis Carney at Lewis Carney has said Coming to America, which we all love, of course. Bradley Page at BradPage2245. Haunted Mansion movie was hilarious.
Well.
You've gone wrong, Bradley.
He's typed in, I don't know what he's done.
I think he probably shit the bed. Meant to put something like Come to America.
He's a big bowl of wrong. Chris Hartman at A. Chris Hartman has said Daddy Day Camp for fuck's sake.
Wait, it's Daddy Day Care?
No, the sequel was Daddy Day Camp.
Oh, really?
I think
oh, bollocks. So. Nope,
I could be wrong. But either way, you're joking.
And no. I'm ready
he went there.
Masturbate again.
There we go.
Too specific.
Come on, wow. Ben.
Are you inviting me? I'm not finishing this set.
You're going to finish this off. Come on.
Right. Give me a drum roll.
Of course.
In 2 weeks' time, we shall be mass debating over Robert De Niro.
We interrupt this program to bring you breaking news. A patient has escaped from the isolation ward and is loose in the city. Vickers van der Merwe was recently apprehended after prolonged sexual activity with aliens in District 9.
Here we are.
It's now time for the rewatch, and this time round it was my choice, and I've gone for Neil Blomkamp's District 9. Now, if you haven't seen District 9, I'm sorry, but we're going to spoil it. We're going to go into lots of detail, talking all about the story, so if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It's on Netflix, and then come back and have a listen to our rewatch. If you have seen the story, well, it goes a bit like this. 30 years ago, aliens arrive on Earth, not to conquer or to give aid, but to actually find refuge from their dying planet. Separated from humans in South Africa, in a place called District 9, the aliens are managed by Multinational United, which is actually completely unconcerned with the aliens' welfare and will do anything to master their advanced technology. When a company field agent contacts a mysterious virus, this now begins to alter the DNA, and there's only one place for him to hide. District 9.
Oh,
I'm ready to talk about this now after that intro.
I'm so excited to talk about this one. Now, what we normally do here is we go around, we talk about our initial reactions and if we love it and if we hate it. I'm going to just scrap it all, and I just want a big discussion about this sci-fi classic. Ben, you love sci-fi and you love me, so...
Well, you know, one out of two ain't bad.
Isn't too bad. Tell me, in the best way you can, why District 9 is such a masterpiece.
It is, in my humble opinion, one of the single greatest sci-fi films of the last, 50 years. I think it's a phenomenal piece of work. It blew me away the first time I saw it. I must have seen it half a dozen times now, and it blows me away every single time. It gets better, it gets deeper, more interesting, more thrilling. It's just a perfect, or damn near perfect, let me not oversell it, but a damn near perfect sci-fi film.
Gemma.
It's phenomenal to think that this was Blomkamp's very first directorial debut, and it's bloody marvellous to boot. It's a believable CGI, the design of the aliens themselves are flawless, and I've never seen anything like this in previous sci-fi films, and I've never met anyone who hates this film. That is a mark of a film that is going to be talked about not just today, 10 years' time, 20 years' time, 30 years' time. This is a blueprint of how modern sci-fi should be.
Wow, I completely agree with both of you. For me, it's probably one of the best science fiction masterpieces we've had since Blade Runner and The Thing, which is back in 1982. Not often do we get decent sci-fi anymore. It's quite rare to have something this gritty and realistic and such a strong piece of science fiction done so well as your debut. Blows my mind. I can't believe it. I reckon he's done 10 films and he didn't tell anyone he's been testing it, because the budget for this film is $30 million. I'm just going to put this into context. You could make The Room five times for that.
Yeah.
Does that not blow your mind? For $30 million, you make this film.
Yeah, it really did. Because in The Room, there's a scene where Johnny's throwing a football around, and I didn't believe a second of it, whereas I believed these aliens. The CGI is flawless. Absolutely flawless. At no point does it feel like you're watching something that was created on a computer.
And it's original.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they give the mocking derogatory term of the word prawns to these aliens, but when you look at the real detail of not just their faces, but the whole body is like a shell of a prawn, mm-hmm. even down to the little sort of the legs on the face, if you will. It's very reminiscent of langoustines. It is just such a quirky and a design that I've never seen. It's just unreal to fathom that this has been created in a way that it's never been before.
It's unbelievable. To have that vision and that confidence for your debut is still blows my mind. And the fact that Peter Jackson took him under his wing and basically helped promote it and get it out there is probably one of the best decisions he's ever made. I think it's so good to see that he abandons the Hollywood sci-fi thing and just went and did it in his hometown of South Africa. I think that's crazy.
Because that's a town.
His own town.
Big fucking town.
His hometown. We've got to go down the road. Oh, and there's South Africa.
Wow.
But the fact he did that and didn't just go to some Hollywood studio and do it, yeah. and did it in his home mm-hmm. city, country, the whole shebang is unbelievable.
Postcode?
But also, we didn't get the overexposed celebrities. We didn't get these big name actors. We had no one in there we'd heard before. This is also, and please pronounce the name for me,
Charlton Copley.
Thank you. His acting debut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What a debut.
He'd done a couple of shorts, I think, with Blomkamp mm-hmm. beforehand, hadn't he? But this was his first feature. Yeah, I mean, going back to what you were saying there about how this film was, you know, made in South Africa, it's extraordinary to think that this film was nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars.
And I didn't know that until you texted me this week telling me that, and I still can't get my head around, because it just wouldn't happen now.
So few sci-fi films get nominated. The Academy generally doesn't recognise sci-fi, it's just a genre they're not into. So this small, relatively low-budget sci-fi film made in South Africa, the fact that it broke through that glass ceiling is huge. Quite rightly, as you say, because it has such an unknown cast. I adore Sharto Copley. We talked about him in Free Fire earlier this year and how hilarious he was in that. And he is unbelievable in this film as Vickers van der Merwe. The graphics, the CGI and everything carry this film, but everything rests on him. If he wasn't so magnetic, so believable, the film wouldn't work. So to use this guy who had no real background in acting, who was someone I think that Blomkamp, he might have talked to you about this on Mark and Me, it was someone he met when he was a teenager and he worked for his company briefly, I believe. The fact that he used his friend and his friend delivered to this level is just nothing short of a miracle.
And it wasn't just a one-off. He's come back, like you said, Free Fire was one of our favourite films of the year, and he stole the whole film against big people, huge actors.
Yeah, and he's brilliant in Elysium as well. He's the best thing in Elysium as the villain.
He's also in 18.
Yes.
In the 18.
Less said about that, the better.
Oh, yeah. Why'd you have to ruin it? Poor guy. He's trying to forget about that.
But essentially, I'm going to divert it back to Copley because he is essentially the beating heart of District 9. And what I love about his performance is we see a real growth within his character. So the character development is top-notch. You know, we see him as Vickers, as this really domesticated, just a humdrum guy who's just going through his work life. And then, of course, after the promotion and the infection, he becomes this warrior, if you will. He finds this kindred spirit into Christopher and his little boy. He essentially becomes the prawns, or the aliens. Sorry, prawns is very derogatory. I should be saying that. The aliens. But his character development is such a fascinating turn of events that, again, you know, if you want the audience on your side, you have to side with the main character. And this guy's it. He is just a wonderful, wonderful character to watch.
And you mentioned there Christopher, the alien that he comes to befriend, Christopher Johnson, that's his human name that he's given. I love how the film really humanises both Christopher and his kid. You know, they speak in an alien language that we just see via subtitles, but the way they move, the way they react to things, by the end of the film you feel that they're human. They're as human as the human characters on screen.
And what about when we go into that sort of that like scientific testing room and he sees his comrades just butchered and mutilated, and you feel the heaviness and the sadness that Christopher sees when he sees his own kind just as mush on this table? It's heartbreaking.
It's all in the eyes. If you focus on the CGI that he's done, which is flawless, I don't know how you get CGI so good, because this is 2009. You know, we're coming up for 8 years old. We are looking at films that look old that were only made 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to do it that well for your debut blows my mind. When I speak to a lot of people about District 9, a lot of people do fault it for the fact that it starts as this mockumentary and then fades and gradually goes to your more conventional film.
Yeah.
For me, I don't even notice it does that because I'm so wrapped up in the events that are going on screen. But all the trailers and everything is marketed, like the found footage, like this kind of cheap camera effect. For me, it's not an issue, and it adds more to it, to be honest. I feel like I'm more involved, like a news reporter that's telling me what's going on in the world, and the cheap cam in South Africa is telling me what's going on with all this explosion and all this rioting and stuff. And I'm sat there going, I feel like I'm part of it.
Yeah.
I don't care that by the end of the film none of that's happening.
No. I agree with you entirely, and this is a bizarre comparison to use, but you know the TV show Modern Family?
Yeah.
Where are you going? They ate prawns
here
on there.
You know how there are parts where the family are sat on their sofa talking directly to the camera, so it's like, okay, is this a documentary?
Yeah.
But then you see their lives going on where it couldn't possibly be a documentary, but you don't care. You suspend your disbelief. It is what it is. That's how I feel about this show, this film rather. There are parts that are clearly documentary style. You see talking head interviews and you see bits of Vickers speaking to the camera, but then there are parts where you're with him in District 9 and that couldn't possibly be a documentary, but it doesn't matter. All of those parts add up to an immersive experience. It makes the film work.
It's like social commentary, because this is clearly a film about the social commentary of apartheid, but it also adds that depth to it with the documentary, with the news reports, with the fact that you are essentially watching a film in the second half of it. I love how it just all merges together and the message within the film. It is just, it's so powerful.
I really like some of the body horror in the film as well.
Oh.
Like when Vickers starts to become part prawn and you see the little crabby hand that he's got and parts of it are popping out of his body and his back, all this shit's coming out of him. I love that. That's some Cronenberg shit.
The eye as well, the yellow eye.
Yeah.
That is perfect. It's Cronenberg meets Black Hawk Down. It really is. That's perfect. It's that when he tries to chop it off and he's looking at his arm and he's weighing it up and then he chops his finger off and the pain you feel is... That's his first go at it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. One of the great things they had as well was the marketing campaign. how they sprung up around the US, and I think in the UK as well. We had, you know, the famous kind of picture of a silhouette of an alien in the little red square, you know, Stop Alien type
yes.
thing. Those were popping up everywhere on both sides of the pond, and no one knew what they were for. I think the first few didn't even say District 9 on them.
Nope.
So people were like, what the frig is this? And it got into people's minds, into the popular consciousness, and that's why the film did such good business at the box office.
May I say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did exactly the same marketing campaign, but District 9 did it first.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should do it with this podcast. We do like a silhouette of us three, which yeah. is our logo, and we just yeah. spray paint it on people's houses.
Sounds good.
get put in prison.
Yeah, but there'll definitely be no kind of charge against us there.
Who is this? What is this? Is it a podcast?
Yeah, why is it on my conservatory?
The one thing I will say is this film stays fresh for the whole 2 hours, which a lot of films lose interest, especially my interest. I'm bored after 10 minutes of most films. I'm starting to be irritable. This film does keep me. I watched this film twice this week, actually, because of the rewatch. I wanted to watch it again because it'd been a while, and then I just wanted to enjoy it and not have to sit there and try and write notes and review it and kind of put my thoughts yeah. on it. And it's so nice just to sit back and watch this film. And it's really hard to kind of try and describe to someone else what it is. What is this film about? Try telling one of your mates that isn't into film. When you go to work tomorrow, tell someone that you work with about District 9. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
But surely that's an advert in itself. If you want to know what this film is all about, go and watch it.
Yeah.
Because there is no regrets about watching this film whatsoever. It's just... can you think of a film that is similar to this,
not
with
really.
The same story?
For grittiness, the closest I can think of is City of God. That's the first thing, because yeah. it's set in South Africa,
yeah.
the sort of scenery, the location, everything, but nothing, yeah. there's nothing like
that. There was a film years back and a TV show that spun off from it called Alien Nation, which had a kind of similar premise, but not delivered anywhere near as well as this.
I genuinely can't think of anything else that compares with this kind of film. You don't have a great big bloody spaceship floating around in the sky.
Do you know what? I love that. I love the visual of the alien mothership just floating in the haze of Joburg, and you always see it in the background. It looks fantastic.
But they don't really focus on it. They don't tell you much. It's just there. It's a bit like Star Wars in Episode 7, where you just see it in the background again.
Mm-hmm.
But how much do we love the RoboCop homage of the final...
Yes. Oh, like the mech suit thing is in.
I'm not doing any impressions of that. Aww. But that's like an alien kind of... a nod to kind of James mm-hmm. Cameron, but at the
yeah.
same time, you know it's RoboCop, and he has inspired by that.
The thing I love about that kind of mech suit that Vickers gets into is that it is very RoboCop 2, and it is very, you know, Terminator, but it also is kind of like a robo-prawn, because it has these little dangly bits below its chin that look the same as the prawns do.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
I need to
yeah.
check that out again.
I think that's so cool. Great design.
It's so cool when you think he's going to run away, and then he comes back for Christopher, and it's just he just completely... kicks ass and just blows everyone out of the water. And that ending, of course, the aliens have now been moved to District 10.
And where's the sequel? It's rare that I want a sequel to a
mm-hmm.
film, especially a film as good as this. I don't want to ruin it by bringing in an inferior sequel, but I want to see more.
We could see Vicar still waiting.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, as well, for me, Neil has never kind of matched this. Chappie and Elysium is nowhere near as good as this, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll even say it himself if you listen to the most recent episode of Mark and Me.
It's
very true. He knows this is his mark on sci-fi, and we need just District 10. I want to go outside tomorrow, walk to the road, go and get lunch at Greg's. That's Greg's. And I want to see a sign that's got the logo again, and I get excited and go, oh
yeah.
my God, here comes District 10. The whole world wants to see it. Give it us. You're not doing Alien. Give us this.
Please.
That's from us. Ben, you on board? You want to see
Big
it?
Big time. Hell yeah. Of course I do.
Listening, Neil. Give it us now.
Before we move on, someone else I want to give credit to is an actor called David James, who plays Corbus. He's the colonel of the MNU sort of military force, and he's the main villain in the piece, and he's such a prick in the
yes.
best possible way. I love it. Every time he's on screen, I love him.
When I watched Avatar with the bad guy in that, I felt like he was trying to emulate this guy. But he kind of failed because Avatar ain't great.
Ugh, I don't even want to talk about it. Why bring Avatar into
because,
this?
Because that's the influence of District 9. That's why I want to bring that in. Because that guy is ruthless. He's a nasty piece of work. He's an evil bastard.
So this is another film you can add to the list of films that Avatar ripped off.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
How many is that now? 867?
Pocahontas, Fern
yeah.
Gully.
And do you know what, guy? Just
Fern
as a.
Gully.
Did you know that Avatar 2 starts filming tomorrow?
No, I don't care. I genuinely don't care.
I haven't seen the first, I never will.
No.
Unless we pick it as a rewatch.
Nope.
No.
Veto.
Honestly, guys, I've got nothing else to say. I can pretty much sense we all love it.
Yep.
We're all huge, huge fans, so let's score it. Gemma.
Wow. I can't think of anything wrong with this film. It gets better as each rewatch comes and goes. Sod it. It's a 10 out of 10 for me.
Crikey.
Ben?
It's a very high 9 for me. It's a damn brilliant film. I love it. I don't know if it would quite go into my all-time top 5, but it's certainly in and around the top 10. 9 out of 10 for me.
It's a 9 for me. It's one of the best sci-fi films you'll ever see. To do that as your debut, it's still at this moment in time. I just can't get my head around it. So I think that actually does a, as cheesy as it sounds, District 9 gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. So whose choice is it for the next rewatch?
It's mine.
Are you nervous, Ben? Because the episode's going pretty well. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up in the next one. A lot of pressure.
Well, that's it, because on the next episode, we are going to be reviewing one of the most eagerly awaited films, oh, God, in a very long time, a little film called Blade Runner 2049. So I want to make sure that on the next episode, we have something a bit lighter, something that we can have a laugh with. So because of that, I suggest we take a little trip to New Zealand. We hang out with some vampires and werewolves, but not swearwolves. So on the next episode, we're going to be watching Taika Waititi's What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes!
It's game show time, and we're going to be playing the brand new hit to skip to the end's arsenal, Word Up.
It's a global hit. It's not just a hit, really? It's a global. It's gone platinum in all the countries you can name.
That's amazing, seeing as it was a complete fucking shambles last time.
Yeah, well, there we go. Well, I feel I should explain what the game entails, because, yeah, there's been a few amendments, as they say, in a quiz game.
I had the right intention, guys. I just didn't put any thought into it.
And you know what, guys? It's worth listening to the episode back, because when that penny drops, oh my, it's a beautiful sound. So I'm going to go over the rules again, just in case. So we're going to have Mark versus Ben, Ben versus Mark. It's going to be a great game. So what our players must do is they've got to guess a film from a number of words that I'm going to give them. So if you guys know the answer, I want you guys to shout your name out and give me the answer. Hopefully the right one. We'd rather have the right answer than the wrong answer. So the premise is there's going to be 5 rounds with 5 clues for each film. So if they guess from the first clue, they're going to be awarded 5 points. Then the next clue is going to win them 4 points. 3 points for the third guess, 2 points for the fourth, and 1 point for the last word given. So you got an idea of the scoring system?
It's sounding suspiciously like the disastrous scoring system that didn't work last time. Please tell me there's a twist.
Basically, the highest number of points is going to win. How about that? If you get the first guess, then you're going to get 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get the most amount of scores or the most amount of points, you win the game. Okay, so contrary to popular belief, the highest score wins. So are we all good to go?
Yes.
I like now knowing how it's going to work.
Yeah. So we're going to kick off with the first round.
Okay. Do you want a reminder that you absolutely smashed Ben to pieces on the last episode?
No.
Technically,
I won. Technically, I won. Yeah. So
it's a tough one now, isn't it?
And we're going to find out who's going to win on this game. So the first clue for your first film. The first clue is records.
Ben.
Go on.
High Fidelity.
You're locked out.
Oh, shame.
I should have said, if you get the answer incorrect, you're locked out for that round.
So that's good of Ben just to do that on purpose.
Yeah. That's,
just
right. To show that's right. That's why I did it, yeah.
There Let's have go. Another clue.
Okay, so your second clue is Red Tie.
Mark.
Go on.
Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Well done. 4 points, Mark.
I'm glad that Ben did that, because I was going to have a go and say Almost Famous, but then I thought, no, don't you do didn't. That, Mark.
Okay, Mark leads 4 points. So your second film and your first guess. Diamond Necklace.
Mark.
Ooh.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
You're locked out, I'm afraid. Oh. Sorry.
Gonna risk it for a biscuit.
Yeah, I like we're being adventurous this time.
That's what you said in the bedroom.
That was a pearl necklace.
So Ben, I'm going to give you your second clue. Life jackets.
Oh, Titanic.
Well done!
Woo!
All
no,
right.
He never said his name.
Don't need to, you were locked out.
Locked out. So, this is interesting. We got 4 apiece.
That's good, dude. That's good.
Well done. Your third clue was going to be ocean, fourth was going to be ship, and the fifth was going to be iceberg. So, third film.
I'm so anxious.
So, your first clue. bushes.
Mark.
Oh dear. Go on.
Halloween.
You're locked out.
That is a very cavalier.
Because he always stands behind it and then appears. An iconic poster.
I mean, that's lovely, but it's not the right answer.
You got to risk it sometimes, dude.
So.
Yeah.
Ben, your second clue.
Yeah.
A scientist.
Oh, God. Bushes and a scientist.
Did you want to wait for the third one?
Well, if I have a guess, am I locked out?
You would be, I'm afraid.
And then I come back in.
I know.
If I pass, both he and I are still in.
I'm afraid so,
I'm going to pass then.
Okay, right. So, Mark, you're back in the game.
I'm back.
So, the third clue. Crazy haircuts.
Ben.
Oh, go on.
Back to the Future.
I'm afraid you're locked out. Oh, Mark, it's you now. See, your fourth one is... Snow.
Honestly, I have no idea. Honestly, I genuinely don't, and I'm going to kick myself.
Okay, so do you want to go for the fifth one for a point?
Ben's back in, isn't he?
Back in.
It's not really worth it for a point, is it?
See your fifth one. Scissors.
Mark.
Go on.
Edward Scissorhands.
The point is yours.
Oh, well done. I wouldn't have got that if I had a million years.
Let's put that to reality. It's 1 point. It's fuck all.
But you know what? This is everything to play for. So, Mark, you currently have 5. Ben, you currently have 4.
It means shit.
Well, no, it means I've got to be more adventurous than you now.
Here we go.
That's also what you said in the... Sorry, man.
Okay, so are we ready for the first one for the fourth film? So your first clue is... A boat.
Mark.
Oh.
Jaws.
Locked out.
Bastard.
I'm afraid. Okay, so Ben, it's now to you. So your second clue. Raincoat.
It.
4 points, Ben.
Get
4 in. 4 points, Ben.
And remake or original?
Either.
I'm just clinging on here.
So your third clue is going to be sewer. The fourth was balloon, and the fifth was going to be a clown.
So recent. I love what you've done there.
Thank you. I'm mixing it up. So, Ben is on 8, Mark is on 5. This is frigging close.
So Mark needs 3 points to tie, 4 points to win.
That's right.
Or 5 just to demolish.
Just to rub it in.
So we're going to go to the fifth and final film.
Yeah.
For 5 points, your first clue. Cancer.
Mark.
He's going to do it. Mark, what is your answer?
The Room.
Locked out. Oh. I'm afraid, Sonny Jim. I'm sorry.
So hold on.
So I can still draw if you don't get it right now.
Yeah. So you can't win, but you can draw if I don't get it right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And okay, I bet you've not done an icebreaker.
Why should I? You didn't do one the last round.
If it's a draw, we're just going to have those bedroom adventures we've been talking about.
Tops off wrestle. So Ben, your second clue for 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Explosions.
Cancer and explosions. Fuck me. I have no idea. Let him back in.
Okay, right. So, for 3 points. IKEA.
Mark.
Okay.
500 Days of Summer.
Locked out.
They went to IKEA on one of the
six. Yeah, because I remember that part when Zooey Deschanel got announced that she had cancer.
And then exploded.
Well, Ben's won.
Okay, so Ben, this is all for glory now. Uh-huh. So, for 2 points. Punches.
I am drawing a blank. I don't know.
Do you want to go for 1 point?
Yeah.
Okay. For 1 point. Soap.
Ben.
Mark.
Ben got it.
Fight Club.
Fight Club it is.
I only got that because of soap.
So.
Ben's won.
9 points to 5.
Not bad. I think we had a bit of respect this
time.
Right. That was good, guys.
So at the minute, Gemma, you won the first round. I won the second round. Next time round, it's Gemma versus Mark.
Ooh.
If Gemma wins, she wins all the marbles. If Mark wins, it's another draw, another tie.
Yay.
Stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. It's now time for some good old listener questions. Kicking things off, we have Rory Knight, who said, what is the best actor that has gone full method for a performance? That's a tricky one to kick off. I need something easy, like, do you like Star Wars? Yes. Next question. For me, when I initially think of this, I think of Machinist, of Christian Bale, that went into that skinny frame of a man. I heard he had a can of tuna and an apple a day and was working out stupid amounts, lost something like 9 stone, and he is unrecognisable as Christian Bale. When you think of him in other films, like American Hustle and stuff like that, the transformation is just insane. So for me to do that and do that to your body again and again, fair play to the guy.
And I'm sure that was only, I think it was a couple of years after American Psycho and a couple of years before Batman. So he'd been big and buff, like bookending that emaciated look he had then. It can't be good for him.
He did it for The Fighter as well. He looks really skinny. Just don't know how he does it.
Blimey. I'm a big fan of Daniel Day-Lewis in My Left Foot. And apparently there was reports that during the takes he would stay within that character and confined himself to the wheelchair. I mean, that's just nuts to think, like, an able-bodied actor would allow themselves to be confined in such a small space.
Yeah, it's kind of offensive in a way, I think.
Yeah, well, that too.
But, you know, good on him.
We're easily offended on Skip to the End,
We are a bunch of snowflakes. I think for me it would be Taxi Driver. I love the fact that when Robert De Niro did this, he actually took the cabbie licensing test and would work 12-hour shifts as a New York cabbie to get into the mindset of Travis Bickle. Brilliant.
I'd love to think I was going, I just need to go to Macy's and he turns up. That's just amazing. Yeah. Put your hand out, then it's De Niro. All right there, mate. You'll have some good stories to tell. Not like normal bloody Uber drivers and stuff that start talking to you about shite when you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But Uber, you know, sore subject right now.
London's just fucked them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a shame, isn't it?
It is. James Bottrell has said, are there certain movies that you religiously watch at certain days or times of the year?
Halloween on every Halloween.
Yep, that's given, really. And I also watch The Thing after it because it's John Carpenter. It makes me think, I want to watch more of his stuff, so then I go straight to that.
Nice.
Christmas for me as well. I know it sounds cheesy, but Die Hard and Home Alone. It has to be done. It doesn't count as a certain time of the year, but Jaws every Saturday.
52 times a year.
And it's still not enough.
I think Die Hard's the only one, not necessarily on Christmas Day, but always around the Christmas period, I will watch Die Hard.
You know it's Christmas when Hans Gruber's falling off a building.
Big time.
The next question comes from Richard Barr, which is at Barracuda303. He's asked us, what is your favourite rousing speeches from all film? That's tough, man.
Oh, no, I know mine, though.
I know mine. It's
Bill Pullman's speech in Independence Day.
That is rousing.
How good is that? You know, today is our Independence Day.
Yeah. Christ, how do you... That's a tough one.
I know. I think I've got the answer, though. Alec Baldwin, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, so good.
A, B, C, always be closing.
I'm going to go with Sean Austin in The Goonies when they're all doubting themselves and he tells them about Goonies never say never and never die and all this and puts them all together, gets them in a huddle. That speech is better than Braveheart. That's the one.
Better than Braveheart.
David Roper has said, if you could stop any movie director, this is evil, from ever making another film, whose career would you prematurely end?
Wow. I think it's fair.
Oh, yeah, it's Michael Bay. He can get to fuck.
Yeah. I would agree, because, you know, we give Thingy a lot of stick. What's his name? The pretentious arsehole.
Terrence Malick?
Either way.
I still want them to carry on, because they're putting a bit of thought into it. Mm. With Transformers 9, I'm done, so piss off Michael Bay.
There's two guys that are responsible for the epic movie, disaster movie, and all that bollocks. Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg. Get rid of them and we'll stop having all these piss poor mockumentaries.
Who keeps giving them money to make them? Because they must have made a dozen by now of these really piss poor parodies.
I wish I knew.
Awful. Daniel Christie has said, a bit of an easy one, are there any movie scores or soundtracks out there that still give you goosebumps? I don't want to sound like a broken tape player here, but... Or broken record, I think people say.
Broken tape player. such a kid of the 80s.
Halloween. That din 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 din. And Jaws. I'm not actually picking about the dun dun. The other songs on Jaws, when I hear them, unbelievable.
When it's under the water, it goes...
Yeah, I just love it. That whole score's gorgeous.
Oh, I'm absolutely in love with the American Beauty score from Thomas Newman. I think, you know, that single piano is just so... so beautiful and pure. But I'm also a big fan of the movie Once, and there's a song by Glenn Hassard and Markéta Iglova called Falling Slowly, which won an Oscar for Best Original mm-hmm. Song. And it's just, it just brings a tear to my eye.
I love the opening theme to Ghost in the Shell, and it's this really sparse, it's mostly vocal, these weird sort of Japanese, you know, verses that I absolutely love, and it's really haunting. But then again, a lot of anime, I think, have these really haunting and really weird and interesting themes. The Akira theme as well, that has this weird sort of woodblock.
That's amazing.
Thing. Yeah. That's brilliant as well.
It's like an isolated kind of noise, isn't it? But...
David Henry has said, what was the first movie as a kid that you realised was badly made? And I'd be honest, like, I've never outgrown this, you probably realise. As a kid, I thought every film's the best and made perfectly. I've not actually ever got rid of that.
They're all masterpieces.
They are.
I remember being haunted by a particular film called The Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh.
And I think even back then when I was a little youngling, being absolutely terrified by the actual sort of kids themselves. They looked like they'd just been run over by a great big truck, and I didn't want them to be my friends.
I think for me it was a few months ago we did Angelina Jolie for Movie Masturbate, and the one I picked was Hackers, and I still find that to be her best performance. I think she's great in it, but if you go back and rewatch that film, it's fucking absurd. Like, when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, this is clearly what hackers do, this is what computers are all about, and now you watch it and you think, whoever wrote this has never seen a computer. They've never even seen an Atari.
Or Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Oh my.
For me, it's going to be Speed 2.
Great movie. But Speed, but on a boat.
Speed was amazing. It was done really, really well. Really, really amazing. Is that too much praise for Speed? Really, really amazing.
It's a damn good film. Good.
I liked the concept.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper.
Why repeat it on a boat? Yeah. Why?
The only time it needs to be repeated is on Father Ted with the milk
oh,
float.
Oh, Speed 3. Yeah.
Can't go over 5 miles an hour.
Ben knows this. I've never seen an episode.
It's insane. I know. It's insane.
I know. Who are
Ever.
You?
You don't even know
You're
me.
Feckin' idiot.
Yes.
At IABD podcast has said, if you could only have one movie franchise to podcast about for the rest of your life, which would you choose?
My instinct is to say Star Wars, but there are so many Star Wars podcasts out there. I think it's a saturated market. And then I suppose the next biggest franchise that I love is the MCU, but a lot of the MCU films are pretty similar. There's not a lot you can say that's different about them. So kind of in a way, I think I'd like to do the DC universe. Because you get really good ones that are worth talking about, like Wonder Woman, and then you get the really fucking car crash ones that are worth just destroying. I think there's always a lot to talk about with DC, so I'd do that.
Oh, I think I would want to do something like Friday the 13th, you know, because the first film is brilliant. I love the first film, but the rest of them are absolute dog shit. But what you can talk about is all the different styles of deaths, the different styles of characters. There's a lot of work that you could really expand on.
I think we should do this and bring them out and see which is the most successful. That would be pretty good. I'm going to pick Alien, because we talk about aliens and basically the way it goes.
Yeah.
Because like Ben said, you need good stuff and bad stuff. I'd love to do Back to the Future, but there's only three of them, and by the third I wouldn't care. But
the third one's shit.
to talk about aliens would be unbelievable, but I reckon there's probably as many of them as there is for Star Wars and everything else. James Carroll has said, if you were to rewatch an actor's entire filmography from the very start to the most recent, whose and why? These questions are getting too hard. I'm on question 8 here. I'm absolutely exhausted. Tom Hanks. He has such a range, and like we just discussed earlier, I get The Burbs, I get Big, I get Castaway, even though Ben doesn't like it, Forrest Gump, so I'd see the bad side.
Worst film ever.
But we said
Road to Perdition.
Thank you very much. We have a lot. We have a big range of stuff.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Everything you know. We get it all. Some damn good stuff. So it'd be Tom Hanks.
I've been asked a similar question to this before, and I kind of have a stock answer. It's a guy called John Cazale, who you will know most commonly as Fredo from The Godfather.
Oh, my goodness.
John Cazale died young. I think he was 42 or something when he died. And prior to that, he'd only made 5 films, and all 5 of them were nominated for the Best Picture at the Oscars. So in order... He did, if I can do this off the top of my head, he did Godfather Part 1, The Conversation, Godfather Part 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and Deer Hunter.
Oh, Christ. My God.
And then he died.
And then Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go out, though.
Yeah, exactly.
5 for 5.
Fair play.
I feel like I'm going to give a really generic answer, but Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yes.
Because you've got the really crap one with Tremors 3, which he's been on record saying he won't even talk about it. He's that ashamed. But then you get films like The Basketball Diaries, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Romeo and Juliet. Then you get the really good stuff, say like The Departed, The Revenant.
Shit, you get loads.
Blood Diamond. It gets better and better. So it's almost like a reverse Alien.
Yeah. I love it. I'm thinking I should change my choice. Sigourney Weaver, because I get Alien, Aliens, Ghostbusters.
The Wrecker series.
Oh, I don't know.
There's a lot of good ones out there.
James Lockwood, what was the last movie you saw that restored your faith in the movie industry? These questions are too hard. I just want, do you like films? Yes.
I think, I guess anything that's not based on previous material or a crappy reboot or a crappy remake or any of those kind of things. Like Logan Lucky we saw recently was thoroughly original and I bloody enjoyed it. Free Fire, you can see that it wears its inspirations on its sleeve, but it was its own thing and I loved it. Anything by Guillermo del Toro. We've got The Shape of Water coming out soon, which I'm super excited for. That looks original as hell.
Whiplash.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Drop mic, walk off.
I really enjoyed Colossal just before the summer with Anne Hathaway.
And I think Jason Sudeikis. That.
No, me neither, yeah.
Superb. You know, you think it's a particular film, but it completely twists you on your head and it's something you didn't expect to see. But again, really just something on its own.
Chris Duck, if Funko, that's a Funko, made pops of you guys, what would you be wearing? And you know that these variant ones that are limited edition that are slightly different?
Mm.
Yeah.
What would you have? I want those made. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I really want those made.
If you're listening, Funko, get on it.
Please.
I'd probably wear a stripy top and dungarees, kind of like what I'm wearing right now.
You've done that on purpose. Look at
you. No, honestly. No, this is like my usual casual wear, so I'm always wearing a stripy top of some sort and a dungarees. But I want the little sort of eyeliner, ticks and red lipstick. Yeah.
We've dreamed about this all of us, haven't we?
Either that or just put me in Poochie getup.
So is that your variant
edition? That's my variant, yeah.
My standard would be my usual casual uniform, which is Vans, checkerboard, slip-ons, pair of jeans, and like a casual check shirt. That is what I wear 9 times out of 10. I think my variant edition would be a Mastodon t-shirt and an Adidas Superstar Classic track top.
You didn't plug any jean company, though. What jeans would you wear?
Levi's, why not?
Yeah, that's what I'd say. I'd just have a standard t-shirt from any company, like Dark Bunny or Last Exit to Nowhere.
They already give us free
shit.
There's no point saying that. Say like Calvin Klein or something.
Yeah. Armani watch. I'd definitely have a Rolex. That would look good.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'd have a movie t-shirt. I'd probably have a Jaws one. And my variant would be one that just says Masterpiece on it or something like that. Jeans, Converse All-Stars. And yeah, just anything like that. Larry, which is at Larry_UU. They don't make this easy, do they? Which Star Wars character would you love to be stranded on an island with?
Oh, 1970s Han Solo.
Yeah.
Because he would save the day and he'd win my heart at the same time and he wouldn't give a damn.
Luke Skywalker, because at the end of Episode 7, he's been stranded on an island, so he has a good experience of what it's like. Plus, he would have so many good stories.
Fair play. I'd say Admiral Ackbar, because I think there'll come a point on the island that food will start to become scarce, and I really like squid. So I'd cook the motherfucker up.
Or Jar Jar Binks. Basement Condition. What was the first movie you felt you wasted part of your life on, which you will never, ever get back?
Oh, fucking hell. Either XXX or Lord of the Rings, whichever one I saw first. Waste of my time.
Matrix 3.
I remember when I was a kid and I watched a film called The Stupid starring Tom Arnold. I must have been about 12, 13 years old and I watched it with my parents and just the biggest waste of time I've ever experienced in my life and I thought, surely it can't get any worse than this. Then Avatar came out.
Will we ever review the second one just as a laugh? No. Like
no.
For 50 Shades? It wouldn't work, would it?
Why? No point.
Rupert Denholm Hall. Where do you guys stand on the whole 15 and 18s certificate films? Because he's been at a cinema recently and his local were giving a lot of grief out because the kids were trying to get in to see it. And it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's a 15A now.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's a rating for a reason, but if you are that stupid as a kid not to say, hi there, can I have 2 tickets to Despicable Me 3, please, and go and sneak into it, that's the way to do it.
I think the BBFC that chooses the ratings in this country are a fucking shit show. Because the way they quantify things. So violence, you can see someone get their head lopped off and it'll get a 12. But as soon as you show a tit, it gets a 15 or an 18. It's like, so is that worse? Is a breast worse than someone being repeatedly stabbed to death? I don't know. I don't understand how they make these decisions.
Mm-hmm. I still don't get it. There's going to be a time in a few months when it's going to be available on, you know, sort of streaming networks. It's going to be available on Blu-ray or DVD. Yeah, you're going to watch it eventually, aren't you?
Real simple one. This is what I like. Mr. Stephen the Bear has said, what is Rey's surname in Star Wars? What should it be? Off the top of your head. Rey.
Mysterio.
I'm going
Ray Ban. That's what the sort of level I want of our questions. Not these big thinkers.
No.
I think mine would be Zer Ramon.
Chica!
Keep your questions coming. The best way to get them is go on skiptotheend.co.uk, and on there is all our links. We look on Twitter, we look on Instagram, we look on Facebook, we check our emails. That's the best way to get your question answered, and we'll do it all again on the next episode in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast, and I am flipping knackered.
I am exhausted.
And I feel like 80 for episode 80.
Yeah, I feel like it's really taken it out of me. I need a kip.
or a power nap.
Or a Solero.
Big time. Bringing it back. I like
it. I'm going to make it happen.
Callbacks. If we don't get a Solero from this, is it, who makes them?
Walls.
I bet it's Walls.
It's got to be Walls. Yeah, yeah. Send us some sausages and send us some ice
different
cream.
Different company, different Walls.
Whatever it is.
I want both.
Spread our wings. We want sausages. Yeah. We want ice cream.
That's you always Solero. Want a sausage. before we say goodbye, let's finish off in our usual manner with Skip to the Recommend. That's where we come to you with our pop culture recommendation of the week. Could be something new, could be something old, but it's something we've discovered recently and we're enjoying, and we want you to enjoy it too. Gemma, what have you got for me?
I've got a Netflix TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's season 4 of BoJack Horseman.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm a little bit excited because it's an animated series that follows the highs and lows of said BoJack Horseman, who back in the 90s, he was in a very famous TV show.
I'm BoJack Horseman.
BoJack. I was going to try and sing it, but I thought, I remember what I did with Sexual Chocolate. I ain't singing shit. So I'm not going to reveal anything about the plot.
Please don't, because I haven't watched season 4 yet.
And
because,
that's why.
Because my Netflix is playing up. So mm-hmm. Netflix, sort it the fuck out, yeah? Because I've rang your customer service and you weren't very helpful. Yeah?
And we can tweet out to 44,000 people saying you're shit.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want to say anything about the plot. So I've actually got a bit of information I want to give to our lovely listeners because it has just been picked up for season 5 by Netflix. So great news.
Hey-o.
But the reason why I want to give it a bit of love is because there is nothing like this at the moment on TV, animated or live action. It depicts depression and anxiety in such a way that is so honest and so transparent, you know, and it's something we don't often see anywhere else. And I'm going to have a little bit of a, I'm not going to be sort of like Dr. Phil here. I'm not going to give like a little therapy session, but I myself, I have bouts with anxiety and it's fucking terrifying at times at best. And there's an episode in particular that depicts anxiety in a way that it's been very hard to describe to people because when I have an attack, it's, you can't explain it and it's very hard for people to understand. But a particular episode, it spoke to me in a way that I find very hard to talk about, and I can only applaud the makers of BoJack Horseman for doing this and just to thank them for making it so relatable. And enough about that, so we got the serious bit out of the way.
Mark,
I need to make a fart joke.
Do you reckon we should probably stop bullying her?
Yeah.
I didn't know she had anxiety.
How long's it been? Well, it started a year ago and one episode. Oh, okay. Shit,
that's all right.
Sorry.
No, so it's fine. Not about that. That's all good. But what I do want to talk about is the voices, because Will Arnett is so powerful as the voice of said horseman. And special props definitely goes to Amy Sedaris, who plays Princess Caroline, and Wendy Malick, who plays Beatrice Horseman, BoJack's mother. It's just the fact that I know it's voice work, but we've talked about this in the past with Scarlett Johansson in Her.
Mm.
You know, she has this wonderful range where you can tell when she's happy, when she's sad, when she's emotional, even when she's feeling rather frisky. But the voice work on this show is just breathtaking. It is absolutely astounding to think that the story that you're watching in front of you and with the vocal work, it works so beautifully and majestically. And I have to kind of say, you know, my favourite episodes is episode 2 and episode 11, and I'm not going to reveal anything more than that. But if those of you who have seen season 3 will remember the underwater episode.
Oh, amazing. Which is essentially wordless.
It is, until, I think, what, 2 or 3 words at the very end?
Yeah.
Everybody raves about that. Episode 2 and episode 11 in season 4, there's no way you think that, how are they going to top that episode? Watch these two episodes, absolutely mind-blowing. Ben, I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on this, but I am super excited about season 5 now.
Yeah. If Netflix get their shit together, I'll watch it soon.
Well, that's that. Come on, Netflix, sort it out.
It's such a great show. How an animated comedy about an anthropomorphic horse can be as moving and as deep as it is, I'll mm-hmm. never know. But it's really quite powerful.
Yeah.
And I don't know, if you actually watched any of it yet, Mark?
Of course I haven't. This is the episode where I've not seen anything. But you rate it a lot. You are always talking to me about how great Rick and Morty in this. Everyone is telling me to watch both. I've watched Rick and Morty now. I'm up to date.
Good.
This is the next one. But, you know, 4 seasons, I'm like, you know, like a bit intimidated.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I'll bang through them straight away.
The thing you need to do with BoJack Horseman is plough through half the first season, because it's kind of learning who it is. It's setting out its stall. The early reviews when it first launched weren't very good. People were like, oh yeah, it's kind of like a crappy Family Guy clone, which is terrible. Nobody wants to be that, because Family Guy is shite. But it finds its feet after 4 or 5 episodes, and it becomes about what it's really about. Stick with it. It's a wonderful show.
There might have been tears on episode 2 for me, but hey, I'm a bit of a sap anyway. Come on, I cried at La La Land. You guys saw that,
ridiculous.
Right? Ridiculous.
I really want to see it. It's one of those ones I just don't know why I haven't got around to it yet, but hearing it, this is what happens. Ben will recommend a book, and I'll send you a text message from my Amazon, and I've actually gone and bought it.
Yeah.
These episodes cost me a lot of money, but luckily Netflix isn't pretty much that expensive when it works.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm paying for nothing.
So I will watch it.
Yeah, I really hope so, because it's very hard to find something like this right now on TV.
It's been a bit serious. I struggle with serious stuff. Mine's an album, which is a first for me. Now, Ben, I know you've done a couple of albums, and it's a difficult one because it's such a personal thing, music. Mm. And I think it's one that's very hard to recommend. But to see the response we got from Death From Above's new album, to see the amount of people tweeting and saying they're loving it, a lot of my friends have said, oh, Ben recommended this band. And I'm like, yes, I know about them too. They're unbelievable. For me, this is a band called Brand New. Okay, so when I say the band Brand New, a lot of people think of the band around 2000, like Good Charlotte and stuff like that. Yes, they were there. They did Sick Transit Glory, which everyone knows, that song that was played in every club, the big poppy thing. They went off and did their own thing. They went off and evolved as a band. They just knew not to carry on with that Kerrang, Scuzz TV, Fountains of Wayne, Bowling for Soup.
Spacey's just got it going on.
All that stuff. They really did. Like Thrice, they went off and they did their own thing. They evolved, and they're musically up there with sort of Deftones. They have just took it to the next level. They're a bit lazy because their last album was 7 years ago, and that album was not the best. It was called Daisy. But a couple of years before that, back in 2006 or something like that, don't quote me, The Devil and God Are Raging Inside Me is one of my all-time favourite albums. It is an absolute masterpiece. It is unbelievable, and the singer is called Jesse Lacey, and you will not find a better lyricist out there. His lyrics are incredible. He's a modern day John Lennon. I am not bigging him up that much to then fall. You need to sit and read them. He's up there with Billy Corgan. His lyrics are phenomenal. They've just released out of nowhere a new album called Science Fiction. 7 years in the making. I put the headphones on. It starts with a track called Lit Me Up. I listened to that song 7 times on repeat by even going to the second track. It's that good. I lied in bed. I got some quite decent headphones that go over my ear, and it just took me somewhere I've never been through music ever before. There's a guitarist called Vincent who is absolutely insane. He reminds me of Radiohead, the stuff he does. The dynamics, everything about it is mind-blowing. Eventually, after listening to this song again and again, I listened to the next track, and it's called Waste. Honestly, I can't big it up enough. This album is an absolute masterpiece. I can't wait to see them live. They're doing a show in London in November, and I was lucky enough to get tickets. It sold out in 3 minutes. This band supported Biffy Clyro a few months back. There is no one out there right now making music as good as this. It is absolutely phenomenal. And you might go, Mark, you've built this up so much, I'm going to listen to it. It's no way going to be as good. Listen to Lit Me Up with some headphones. Listen to it again. You will not hear anything better this year.
What I love about this is this is how you feel about that, and I find that absolutely fascinating and captivating.
It's that good. Mm. And I'm not joking. You're not going to, even if you don't like this sort of genre music, you'll appreciate it for what it is. Jesse is by far the best songwriter in the world right now.
I must admit, I'm not familiar with them. This is all brand new to me.
So there we go. I'm that passionate about it. It's phenomenal.
It is nice, actually. I don't think I've ever seen you this passionate about something that wasn't a Corey Feldman film from the 80s.
That's really cool to hear.
Honestly, listen to that track and you'll be just blown away. And I can't wait to see tweets of people going, oh my God, I've now gone and checked out The Devil and God. No, it's incredible. The best band on the planet right now. And you know how much I love Deftones and Cemetery Piss and obviously other bands like that.
Hard to get in there.
Corey Feldman.
What about Goat Semen?
They're the ones.
Pretty good.
That's coming up on the next episode. Come on then, Ben.
So, despite everything I've said just now, I've also picked a Netflix show. So, I haven't watched BoJack because I won't watch it through the shit quality I've been getting through my Netflix service at the moment. But I did watch this show because I didn't mind that it was going to be shit quality because I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, but I really did. It's a show called American Vandal.
Who drew the dicks?
Hashtag who drew the dicks.
Yay, I haven't seen it yet.
Have you not seen it yet?
I'm going to.
Okay, so I watched something else on Netflix. I can't remember who it was, but at the end of it, you know when you get to the end of a series, they'll show you a trailer for something new that's coming up. I hadn't heard of American Vandal, so I just assumed it was another one of Netflix's brilliant true crime documentaries like Making a Murderer. So this thing comes up, and it's about a high school where someone had spray-painted 27 dicks on the cars of the staff of this school. And they're interviewing people, these, you know, talking head interviews saying, no, did you draw the dicks? And everyone's pointing at this guy called Dylan, who's the class clown. And I'm watching this thinking, is this real? Is this a real documentary? And it wasn't until the end of the documentary when it flashed up hashtag who drew the dicks that I thought, it's probably a spoof. And then it came on, and my God, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good because it's funny. It's a parody. It's a spoof, so it is funny. But it's not joke a minute. It's not one of those kind of mockumentaries like Spinal Tap where it's joke, 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 joke. This is more based on kind of... The humour is in recognising how true to life it is. And with each episode that passes, you get to meet more characters, more of the students, more of the staff. And the mystery deepens. Who drew the dicks? You don't know if it was this guy or that guy. And... you don't know till the end. You get hooked in. It's funny and you're enjoying it, but you're generally intrigued by the mystery and the thrill of it all. It's such a well-made show, and it genuinely does feel as good as things like The Jinx, which is for me, the best true crime thing in the last decade, mm-hmm. and Making a Murderer, which was great as well. And the reason why it works so well is because the cast is almost entirely unknown. So all the kids, I'd never seen any of those kids in anything before. I tell a lie, one of the kids was in a couple of episodes of Orange is the New Black, and I only realised that afterwards. When I looked at his IMDb, I went, oh yeah, I remember him now, but I hadn't at the time. One of the teachers I kind of remembered from something else, but because they all seem unknown, you get drawn in. It does genuinely feel like this true crime documentary and about who drew the dicks, and there's all these kind of theories. So he can't have done it because the time lapse between when he was there and when he was here, he couldn't have done it, but there's no CCTV and all this. It's absolutely fucking brilliant. It's genuinely thrilling. The acting is superb across the board, but especially from Jimmy Tatro, who plays Dylan, who is the main suspect. He really sells his role as this lunk-headed douchebag who all he wants to do is, you know, go around on his skateboard and tag things. He's absolutely brilliant.
I've already plussed it on my watch list. It is going to be watched at some point.
You've probably just seen me take out my phone while recording, which we don't do here. Mm. Skip to the end. So this is the weirdest thing ever, and it's why it clicked. So Jamie Wilson, as our listener question this week, said, hi guys, I've just finished watching American Vandal. Thought it would be really shit, but it actually turned out to be eye-opening and interesting. Have you seen it?
Oh my God. I left it off
just thinking, oh, that's a yes or no answer.
Yeah.
How's that for an answer,
there
dude?
There you go.
There's one word to use on this point. Synergy.
So there you go.
Watch it, all of you. You two in the room.
Have I got to watch?
Everyone, no, honestly, I think it's 8 episodes, half an hour ago. So, man, 4 hours of your life.
All right.
Get it done. Yeah, it's so good. It's gripping, genuinely.
BoJack's 20 minutes per episode.
If I'm ill this week off work, which could happen, it is genuine, but I would be probably watching a lot of the stuff we've discussed today.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Wow. Talking about watching stuff, what's on the next episode?
What a segue that was. So
lovely,
professional.
Seamless.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Big one, innit? It is, though.
What are we talking about?
probably the biggest film since we've started this podcast for Ben personally, I think. Mm.
Yeah, it's Blade Runner 2049, and I still don't know what to think. I don't know what to expect. At this point, at the time we're recording, there have still been no early reviews. I don't know.
So because of that, the rewatch for the next episode is going to be nice and light and funny. So we're going to watch Taika Waititi's What We Do in the Shadows.
Amazing.
I've only seen it once. Me too. I'm really looking forward to seeing it again, because when I did see it, I absolutely loved it and went, that's like Spinal Tap. I love it. Yeah. So I'm excited.
And for the listeners, it is available on Netflix. I feel like we're giving Netflix too
much
promotion.
Well, it's not available
here
on Netflix. If you've got a shit account that doesn't work, it might be available. Yeah.
Again, are you listening, Netflix? Sort it out.
We're going to have some amazing prizes to give away. Our good guys at Funko have given us those exclusive, incredible The Kingsman full set.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. This is where we're at now. We've got some great t-shirts from Last Exit to Nowhere. We've got the bundle from Kingsman. We've got loads of stuff to give away, but the best thing is we'll have even more to give away on the next episode.
We always do. We've got a great topic as well. Top three spy movies. Spy, secret agents, espionage, however you want to slice it. That's going to be good fun.
It's going to be tricky, because I already know, just from Googling potential topics in the future, there's so much to choose from.
Oh, big time.
And hello, movie masturbate, sir, Mr. Squire Robert De Niro. Or King.
That's the one, isn't it?
King De Niro.
I think it is the one. Is it the best one we've had so far?
Hands down.
Until we pick Dad out, I think that's the one for me.
Can we push the episode back a week so I can have an extra week just to watch Robert De Niro films?
Oh, that's a good one. And I'll be taking part in the very final round of Word Up. And I'm going to be against you, Gemma.
That's right.
And it could be a draw.
Shall I come up with a third different scoring system just for the crack?
Let's do it.
If you get it right, you lose a point.
And then if you're down a beer, you get 1,000,000 points.
Loads are coming up. Absolutely loads. Yeah.
It is all the usual shenanigans that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We will see you in 2 weeks' time. Yeah.